Let me look it up.
Blog Talk Radio.
Back in 1927, an American socialist, Norman Thomas, six times candidate for president on the Socialist Party ticket, said the American people would never vote for socialism. But he said under the name of liberalism, the American people will adopt every fragment of the socialist program. There are many ways in which our government has invaded the precincts of private citizens, the method of earning a living. Our government is in business to the extent of owning more than 19,000 businesses covering 47 different lines of activity. This amounts to a fifth of the total industrial capacity of the United States. But at the moment, I'd like to talk about another way, because this threat is with us and at the moment is more imminent. One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. It's very easy to disguise a medical program as a humanitarian project. Most people are a little reluctant to oppose anything that suggests medical care for people who possibly can't afford it. Now, the American people, if you put it to them about socialized medicine and gave them a chance to choose, would unhesitatingly vote against it. We had an example of this under the Truman administration. It was proposed that we have a compulsory health insurance program for all people in the United States, and of course, the American people unhesitatingly rejected this. So, with the American people on record as not wanting socialized medicine, Congressman Farrand introduced the Farrand Bill. This was the idea that all people of Social Security age should be brought under a program of compulsory health insurance. Now, this would not only be our senior citizens, this would be the dependents and those who are disabled. This would be young people if they are dependents of someone eligible for Social Security. Now, Congressman Farrand brought the program out on that idea of just for that particular group of people. But Congressman Farrand was subscribing to this foot-in-the-door philosophy because he said, if we can only break through and get our foot inside the door, then we can expand the program after that.
Everyone, and welcome to Woman Patriots. Tonight we're going to have a special election coverage coming out of three different states. We actually have two results in with not very many reporting, nothing reporting in the District of Columbia yet, but they've already called Mitt Romney the winner. As we know, Rick Santorum wasn't even on the ballot. Have no idea where that's going to go. Maryland has been called for Mitt Romney with 3.6% reporting. He's at 53% and Rick's at 27%, which is actually pretty good in a state that always votes Democrat in the prime or in the presidential elections. So once again, Romney showing that he can win in the liberal states. Not really a big surprise. That's how it was expected to go. Rick didn't even campaign in Maryland, so no surprises there. Tonight, though, I do want to talk about this latest controversy that our current president has stirred up with his Supreme Court warnings, and it's really kind of interesting. He's just trying to use his Saul Alinsky tactics to stir things up before the elections. And this time he was taking a shot at the conservatives on the Supreme Court. But as we all know, the conservatives on the Supreme Court tend to rule as the Constitution would have them rule, which unfortunately our president said, and I'm quoting, ultimately, I am confident that the Supreme Court will not take what would be an unprecedented, extraordinary step of overturning a law that was passed by a strong majority of a democratically elected Congress. Conservative leaders say the law, which was once fully implemented, would require Americans to have a health insurance or pay a penalty, was an overreach by Obama and the Congress that passed it. But the president sought to turn that argument around, calling a potential rejection by the court an overreach of its own. And I quote, and I just remind conservative commentators that for years what we have heard is the biggest problem on the bench was judicial activism or lack of judicial restraint, that an unelected group of people would somehow overturn a duly constituted and passed law. Obama said. He says, well, this is a good example, and I'm pretty confident that this court will recognize that and not take that step. Unbelievable. I'm going to read to you the part of the Constitution that kind of tells you what the Supreme Court is actually supposed to be about, because obviously our president really doesn't have a clue, okay? It's just mind-boggling that the things that come out of his mouth.
Well, the funny part, Brenda, is that he is a constitutional scholar.
Well, supposedly.
He supposedly knows the Constitution inside and out, backwards and forwards, and he is so wrong in every aspect of interpreting it.
Yes. And I'm going to go, let me quickly, Article 3, Section 1, the judicial, my tongue tied, judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. So here we have a power, the Supreme Court. And then the inferior courts are actually established or ordained by Congress, so those courts can be overturned. The judges, both of the Supreme and Inferior Courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior and shall at stated times receive for their services a compensation, which shall not be diminished during their continuance in office. Section 2, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority, to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and councils, to all cases of admiralty and maritime jurisdiction, to controversies to which the United States shall be a party, to controversies between two or more states, between a state and citizens of another state, between citizens of different states, between citizens of the same state claiming lands under grants of different states, and between a state or the citizens thereof and foreign states, citizens or subjects. In all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers and councils, those in which a state shall be party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. In all the other cases before mentioned, the Supreme Court shall have appellate jurisdiction, both as to law and fact, with such exceptions and under such regulations as the Congress shall make. The trial of all crimes, except in cases of impeachment, which we all know is tried by the Senate, shall be by jury, and such trial shall be held in the state where the said crime shall have been committed. But when not committed with any state, the trial shall be at such place or places as the Congress may by law have directed. So basically, you know, the Supreme Court is to uphold the Constitution. And as we all know, these lawsuits have been brought by the state against the government. And so this case should be tried in the Supreme Court, and they have the ultimate say on whether this is or not constitutional. And if we read what the actual president is allowed to do under Article 2 of the Constitution, this president is so far out of line in what the presidential powers are that it is so unfortunate. It's just really, really, really unfortunate, because that is his main job as president, actually, is to deal with foreign powers. And he's not to do anything without approval from the Congress, from the Senate. And yet he's just out there giving money away and going behind our backs and giving money to foreign powers, as he's done in Egypt. And then he has the nerve to take a shot at the Supreme Court.
Well, only that, you also know that just Monday he also made it, the EPA is now outlawing coal plants. All of them are being closed down.
Now that's insane.
Right?
Right. So that's an elected branch there, the EPA. Yeah. Right.
No, it's not. It's just fact that Senate and the House did not pass cap and trade. And this is the EPA's way of saying we're going to enforce it anyway.
Yes, I know. And they can't do that. That's not constitutional. They don't have
that authority. But they are doing it. They did it yesterday.
Yeah. But you know why? And you wonder what our Congress is doing about it. This is
the
problem we have
in
Washington, folks. We have an ineffectual Congress. We have an ineffectual presidency,
Senate.
A president who is trying to take over this country with his czars and his agencies that are not even constitutional. And we all should be really, really afraid of that. And we need to get away from the establishment control. Okay, in Wisconsin, we have 0.1% reporting, one little county of Brown County. And that has Rick Santorum in the lead currently at 50%. That is, it's reporting 2.9% reporting from that little bitty, tiny, little bitty place. So
I know where Brown County is.
Too close to call yet. So
my sister lives in Brown County, and I know she's
there?
A Democrat. But
yeah, did she vote? Because Democrats can vote in Wisconsin.
She might have voted. Yeah, she might have. Who knows?
So anyway, that's the first news coming out. But I also wanted to bring up, and this is the great part, because the Fifth Circuit Court is actually ordered. It's an appeals court. It's the Fifth Circuit Appeals Court. Three-judge panel actually has ordered the Department of Justice.
Eric Holder in particular.
Eric Holder in particular, that by tomorrow they have to have in writing a three-person paper from the Department of Justice saying whether they agree with the president or not, that the court doesn't have the power to rule on the constitutionality of any law made.
But do you know why they're asking for that in writing?
Yeah.
Do you know why?
Go ahead. Tell them.
Well, because guess what? If in writing he does say with his signature on it that that can happen, not only him, but the president himself has the ability of the courts to bring them in and haul them in for impeachment trials.
Right, right. And here's the direct quote. This is a direct quote from Judge Smith. He says, I would like to have from you by noon on Thursday, that's about 48 hours from now, a letter stating what is the position of the Attorney General and the Department of Justice. This puts Holder on the spot because Holder's got to write this. In regard to the recent statements by the president, Smith said, what is the authority of the federal courts in this regard in terms of judicial review? And he made his intentions clear minutes after the DOJ attorney began her arguments, jumping in to ask, does the Department of Justice recognize that federal courts have the authority in appropriate circumstances to strike federal statutes because of one or more constitutional infirmities? And, of course, the lawyer, Carsvang, replies yes. And Smith continues, I'm referring to statements by the president in the past few days to the effect, and sure you've heard about them, that it is somehow inappropriate for what he termed unelected judges to strike acts of Congress that have enjoyed, he was referring to, of course, Obamacare, to what he termed broad consensus and majorities in both houses of Congress. In asking for the letter, Smith said, I want to be sure you're telling us that the Attorney General and the Department of Justice do recognize the authority of the federal courts through unelected judges to strike acts of Congress or portions thereof in appropriate cases. So that's going to be very interesting. Kind of a smackdown coming up, don't you think? It's about time. I mean, people need to be standing up, and I know there's lawsuits making their way.
Well, you know
why?
People actually do not. They literally. I mean, there are people who absolutely do not believe what they consider conspiracy theories that President Obama has a dictator's agenda.
Right.
They don't see it that way.
We see it that way,
and we know it to be so, but they literally don't believe it. They just say, oh, that's kooks talking, they're, you know, activists, they're, you know, right-wing nuts, whatever they want to call us, but they don't see it as actual, factual, their own activism. They think that, you know, Eric Holder, the Department of Justice, the president, they don't have this ideology agenda. They have the will of the people in their mind, I mean, which isn't so.
Right.
They think they know the greater good. They know better than we do what's good for us. And that's
it's not truly about the greater good. It's about providing the opportunity for the greater good, not for the government to provide the greater good. But quickly, I've got 0.2% reporting from Wisconsin, still have brick up on Santorum. That's just two counties starting to report in. Still has not been called for either one, so it must be too close to call. So this is the one we're actually watching tonight the closest, because even though Romney was polling ahead of Rick there all along, he was polling only perhaps within the 9% or less range, and we know that Rick tends to outperform polls. So it's going to be interesting to see how that turns out. If Rick doesn't win, it's not unexpected, because you know all the polls and everything have been showing Mitt Romney winning,
This is the other like word in the vine. You know, they're saying that we in Wisconsin, I should say not we, but in Wisconsin, there's two messages. Okay, if it's really close again, like it was in Ohio, there's the possibility of it being, you know, really bad for Romney, but at the same time, not good for Santorum because he lost even.
Mm-hmm.
But it still doesn't encourage anybody to really forcefully say Rick needs to get out.
Right.
They want Rick.
The
establishment and those endorsing Mitt Romney really want Rick Santorum out of the race.
Yeah, because
they
he's a threat, and they don't like that fact. And then they condemn him for negative campaigning, and yet Romney makes these robocalls, incessant robocalls that turn people off. They had some people polls out today showing that the excitability on the Republican side is dropping like a rock, and it's because they're pushing Romney on us, and Romney is turning people off, because I've actually talked to these people on the phone, with his negative robocalls. Nothing telling about himself, but everything negative about supposedly Rick's not a conservative, horrible record. And it's just been very, very frustrating from that standpoint. Rick actually had out for the first time a campaign. I don't know if you saw it, the one where it has a picture of Obama and there's a woman speaking about the things that he did.
Uh-huh.
It's called This Man, and you need to see it, because they have a picture of Obama, but then they're like, it's not this man, it's this man, and they put up Mitt Romney. And folks, let me tell you, Obama's out there today saying the conservatives are the one that brought up the mandates, not the liberals. And if you look at the congressional record, they were the ones kind of pushing for the mandates. And Romney.
Yeah, but see,
mandates.
You know, they did it so that they could take it to court. And because they all knew it was unconstitutional. So they, you know, they thought, hey, let's just, you know, have them do it. And then we'll repeal the damn thing because it's unconstitutional.
Right. But here's the thing. Most people aren't going to know that. So when you
come
out of the election, yes, exactly. And when they say, well, look, Romney did this with the individual mandates in Massachusetts, it's the same thing. And then they're going to believe Obama. People just need to wake up. Romney, his state in Massachusetts, when he was governor, was 47th in jobs out of 50 states. 47th. Why do we think he's going to be better with the United States? I'm sorry, but 47th of 50 states is not a good number. We got 0.5% reporting in from Wisconsin. Madison looks like it's starting to come in with 5.2% reporting for Rick Santorum. So that would be good news. But we got not quite 1%. Uh-oh. Milwaukee just came in, so it just dropped to a 40-40. Milwaukee obviously is the going to be the liberal one, and that is reporting, and so it's an even tie at 40% with partially Milwaukee reporting in at 1%. Madison's at 5%.
Yeah, look at the number of votes. They have exactly the same number of votes.
Exactly the same, yeah. But this is what we normally see in all of our masses, in the big cities like Milwaukee, Chicago, and all those cities that the Democrats will win in November. Don't kid yourself. They're not going to vote Republican, even if it is Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney wins. And if you look at the counties, generally, Rick Santorum wins more counties. Now, Maryland's going to be different on that because it looks like most of Maryland's going to come in for Mitt Romney. But we've got 7.5% reporting for Maryland. And we have Romney at 52% and Rick at 28%, which is pretty darn good for that. Newt Gingrich at 10.6%. And at this point, I'm going to say it again. Newt Gingrich is taking votes, and he needs to get out. If he's truly concerned about stopping Mitt Romney and for the conservative cause, he would get out and back Rick. I don't see it happening because I don't believe that that is what Newt is all about, and I've said it all along. And you can call in and disagree with me if you like. Our phone lines are open. We encourage everybody to call in and join the discussion. Ron Paul's polling at 8% in Maryland. I'd call for Ron Paul to get out, but we all know Ron Paul's not going anywhere. And for some reason, his supporters think he's winning. That one just boggles my mind totally.
You know, I was saying today, if you went to the Patriot Soldiers page, I was saying today, you know, it's just so funny that these are the ones saying we want our freedom. We want freedom to do what we want to do. But at the same time, and they think they know what the Constitution is all about.
Right.
They ignore the fact that the Declaration defines the Constitution. The Constitution itself does have a, you know, just like all maps have legends and all books have prefaces, well, the preface to the Constitution happens to be the Declaration. And the rights that we have, the freedoms that we have, are laid out in the Declaration. We do not have the right to smoke marijuana, become prostitutes, or abort our children because a state says it's okay. Those kind of things are things that the federal government should have a role in, you know, determining. And the number one thing that they don't have is the means at which to redefine the institution of marriage. They cannot. That is just totally, blatantly immoral.
Right. And that's, I guess that's the big, and that's a big question that you and I bring up oftentimes, and even Rick brings it up, is that our founding fathers were a moral and virtuous people. You know, they believed in God and they believed in morals. And so when you're looking at the Constitution and you're looking at the laws, you have to keep that in mind of what they intended with that. But, you know, generally they intended that anything not vested in the Constitution be given to the states. And our federal government is so out of control, it's not even funny. Well, Rick has pulled slightly ahead with 1.6 reporting. He's up to 40.9% with Mitt Romney at 40.7%.
It would be nice if it ends up like this kind of a thing. To definitely just, like, be an in-your-face to Mitt Romney that guess who needs to get out?
Well, you know
not
what?
Not Rick Santorum.
I prayed this morning that, you know, people's hearts in Wisconsin would be open and that they would vote for, you know, the candidate that their conviction was for instead of being scared into it by the Republican Party and, you know, folding to the Fox News and all these networks that keep telling us that Romney's going to be the winner. You know, it's time for we the people to take back control.
Exactly.
We are being controlled by party leaders who are, most of them have money. Let me tell you, it's all about the money. And I thought going into this election that the Tea Party and the conservatives wanted to have real change in Washington and wanted to get the money out of Washington. And yet, here we have the biggest money man of all, Mitt Romney, in the lead, and got support from supposed Tea Parties and conservatives, and they have no idea that what they're asking for. He supported bailouts, and he said he'd support them again for Wall Street. Well, where is his money? It's in Wall Street. You know, his money isn't in the automobile industry in Michigan, which was another failure by the administration when they bailed it out and then forced them to make cars, electric cars. Oh, and here's the great thing. You know, the Chevy Bolt doesn't work. I went for a drive today, okay, and it's a Japanese car, and I bet that's probably maybe Thomas calling in on Skype, but I'll get to you in a minute. We drove a Toyota Prius today. The thing runs on battery that you don't have to plug in, okay? You don't have to plug it in. If you're going only a certain number of miles, the battery kicks in. Like if you're stopped at a stoplight, the battery kicks in, the gas turns off, and it gets 50
yeah.
miles to the gallon. It's so awesome. But this car was made in Japan. You know, the technology is out there. But, you know, this joke of a Chevy Volt that they put out that the Fox News guy drove and could only go 26 miles before he had to plug it back in for 10 hours is ridiculous. You know, you've
and
got
you know,
to
it's
let
so funny.
Work.
This is the funny thing about President Obama. He's been sitting here back here calling, he's out there calling us the Flat Earth Society and talking about going back in the days. Guess what happened, like, in the late 19th century, early 20th century, they created an electric car. Want to know what? It went as fast as today's electric cars go.
Right, right. Well, that's the thing with this Prius, because it's partial gasoline and partial electric, that, you know, you can go whatever speed you want to because the gasoline engine will kick in. But then as you're, like, driving in town and stopping, the battery kicks on. And so it's pretty awesome technique, and it's really an awesome car. My son was, like, really impressed with it. He's 17. He wanted to get it because of all the gadgets. Like, no, we don't buy it for gadgets.
Hey, I brought in our caller. Who do we have here?
Thomas?
What?
Calling in with Skype?
Of course.
Of course. I can't hardly hear you.
Yeah,
are you okay?
Oh, yeah. I just have a headache.
Oh, those are never fun. Never fun.
I know how those go. If you're talking about the one that you were saying on the air earlier from having that iodine thing.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You got any special words for us tonight?
Don't continue to waste your voice talking about that person who's blowing nothing but hot air, because he's getting ready to get smacked down very soon. So you know what? It is what it is. Start focusing on what we as Americans can do to contribute to make a difference. I know that for me with the Missouri chapter of the Frederick Douglass Foundation, we're getting ready to start a major fundraising campaign, and my goal as the state chapter president, by the end of this month, we're going to raise $20,000. How's that going to happen, you might wonder? Well, it's all about who you know. And so, I mean, there's really many things that sometimes we don't think, we don't realize what we are capable of doing until
uh-huh.
we do. You know,
right?
So,
unless we try,
right? And I've been blessed to have made connections all over the country with people. Pastor C.L. Bryan is going to be one of those who's going to be helping me in this endeavor. So, you know, you just believe in what you're doing, believe in the cause, and make sure that what you're doing is based on the truth, not a truth, as the liberals like to say, but the truth. And that truth can only be weighed against Scripture. So that's
right.
My word for today.
Well, thank you for those words of wisdom, because, you know, so many times we get wound up in what we can't control and let the things go that we actually can do something about and get out there and try to do it. So we appreciate those words of wisdom. So we
not
got
a few problem.
We got a few, let's see, we got 8.4% reporting in from Maryland. We have Romney at 51% and Rick Santorum at 28%, Newt Gingrich at 10.7%, Ron Paul at 8.2%. D.C. is reporting in 0.7% reporting, has Mitt Romney at 66%, but there's very few votes out there. Just looks like about 400. And there's 25 for others in Washington or District of Columbia. And in Wisconsin, go ahead.
was just going to say sounded like everybody, all the Republican congressmen voted for Mitt Romney. Sorry, that I just had to
That's
take
funny.
A shot at the idiots.
Oh, the establishment. I love they gotta
yeah.
love the establishment. I don't think they get to. I don't think they vote in District of Columbia, though. I think they have to vote in their home state. So,
oh,
or in
okay.
the case of Richard Lugar, you get to vote in Indiana, even though you live in Virginia or wherever she lives. I don't know, because
right.
it ain't here, which is a whole other constitutional issue, which I will be writing a letter to the editor about. But right now in Wisconsin, we got 2.5% reporting with Mitt Romney up 41% to Rick Santorum's 39%. Like I said, Milwaukee is starting to report in, so we'll see how this plays out. I did see a tweet that supposedly Fox News has called it for Romney, but we'll wait and see what happens here because let's see. Okay, 5% reporting from conservative stats, Santorum at 40, Romney Care at 41, Paul at 11%, and Newt at 6%. So that's what they're reporting out as the Wisconsin primaries. So we'll see how that plays out tonight, how different from the polls it might be or not be. So
why is Fox News calling it already?
Well, we know why Fox News calls it already. Because they
well, that
you
scares
know.
Me though. I'm just sitting here thinking, okay, you're saying with 5% reporting, this says 2.9, but
well, yeah,
5%
stats is J.C. Hagan. I don't know where he gets his stuff, but he's pretty accurate. And now he's got 6%
yeah.
reporting, and it's still Romney 41, Santorum 40. So I don't know I don't know how they do their exit polling or where they get their information, but what we can only.
Well, I certainly wouldn't call it when there's only 18 votes of differential between them. I mean, if you look at what we have, you know, here on the HuffPo one,
yes.
they've got 18 votes different.
Right. And look at these counties stacking up out here in the kind of northeast side
yeah.
of the state. So,
yeah.
Down toward Milwaukee, we've got a little
yep,
more.
Yep, it says it's called for Romney.
Oh, they called it for Romney, 2.8% reporting. So, but
who
is it
call, 40, whoa. Who's calling
yeah.
it for Romney?
Everybody.
News agencies.
How
they're going by
are
exit
they
polls.
Okay.
Yeah, they go by exit polls. So we can hope maybe the exit polls are wrong.
Time out. Time
exactly.
out.
Exactly.
Time out for
What's
me.
That?
Time out. Did these
yeah.
stupid people not learn their
they
lesson
called
in Iowa?
Already.
Did they
no.
not learn their lesson in Iowa?
No, they didn't.
No, they didn't.
Obviously not.
Or Florida with the Bush thing in Florida and, you know. No, they didn't learn their lesson, but we'll just kind of see how it plays out. Hopefully it's still going to be a really, really close win.
Okay,
we'll
okay.
just have to. Have to see where we come. But we'll be watching that throughout the night and just discussing, you know, the events going on today and where we go from here. Rick Santorum's already spoke. He spoke on Fox in Pennsylvania. He's in Pennsylvania now because that's the next big one coming up. Where Rick is still up over Mitt Romney in his home state of Pennsylvania. So hopefully that's going to the hold, get us through the month of May, and then April we have some big states like Texas coming up, and Indiana. Well, actually, Indiana, we're up in May, yeah. So North Carolina, those kind of things. So we will see how this plays out. I want to remind everybody, because everybody seems to think that whoever we put up against Obama is going to win in a landslide like Reagan did in 1980. I would remind everybody to go take a look at history and what they said about Ronald Reagan in 1980 from the establishment. Because if you look at what the establishment said about Reagan in 1976 and in 1980, it was that he was too conservative to win. And what the establishment tends to forget is that the base of the Republican Party is
Conservatives.
And when you don't have your base support, you're not going to win. And I can tell you right now that their base support for Mitt Romney is not out there, and it's showing up in the recent people polls that they've done, because the people polls have been showing a steady decline in the excitement that's coming out of the GOP with a steady increase.
But listen, this is the thing. They think that all conservatives are free votes. We're automatically going to vote against Obama, no matter what. That's just how the establishment views us, as insignificant to, you know, to woo or to consort to make sure that we're happy along with everybody else. They want to only enamor the independents and the moderates.
Right.
They have no
right.
intention to enamor us. And you know what we're saying, Lynn? We're saying, and not just, I mean, not me in particular, but there's a lot really strict conservatives out there who want Santorum so bad, they will not vote if Romney is the choice. Romney is not anti-Obama to them. Romney is voting for Obama Jr.
It is, exactly. And if you look at the records, you're going to see that match. And how is he going to provide a contrast? He's not. And how is he going to draw the black vote? He's not. Because that vote typically goes 90% to the Democrats. And if you put up a big money guy like Mitt Romney, who is part of the 1%,
it would go to the Democrat who sits here and says we want to give all this stuff to the black race in particular, or it goes to the one who gets to them spiritually. And Rick Santorum has a much higher favorability amongst blacks than Mitt Romney does.
And it's because of its
conservative
value.
Spirituality.
Right. Which Mitt won't even talk about his faith.
You know what? I'll tell you straight out. And I was reading this today on I can't remember who it was. But it was a blog by this conservative black man. And he was calling Mormons kooks, you know. Mormons, because, you know, of the way they look at the whole outer space issue and stuff like that. And, you know, they see Mormonism as a laughable religion. It's not even considered a real religion in many, many, many aspects.
Right.
But, and even, you know, my husband to this day calls it a cult. I myself have heard it labeled such, but my own priest has said, well, you know, he's given it this little pass, so to speak, like it just skirts around the edges into the realm of religion and not cult. But
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, here's something interesting I'm reading on from Fox News, no less. Big letter sweep: Romney wins Wisconsin. You know, like this is a big deal. He swept. One of them, Rick, wasn't on the ballot, and the other one, he was expected to win. You know, with 53% of the vote. So. There's only one race in play tonight, and that is Wisconsin. And we're going to have to see, you know, where that comes in. And even that one, Mitt was expected to win. So it's interesting that by winning one state, he's being called a sweep. It's like, yeah, okay.
Well, yeah, you know what? When Santorum won 4 in one night, it wasn't even big headline news.
Oh, no, it wouldn't be. It wouldn't be. So, and if we look at it now, it looks like Mitt's pulling in 16 delegates coming out of District of Columbia and 28 delegates so far in Maryland. So we'll see how that plays out. They don't have any of the Wisconsin delegates posted yet, so it must not be winner take all, or they would have posted them. But, folks, this is just the halfway point. You know, this is only halfway in the nomination process, and yet they want us to lay down and give up so they can concentrate on beating Obama with a candidate who has the same record as Obama. He has Romney care. You know, it just doesn't make any sense. He voted in favor of TARP. He was in favor of the bailouts of Wall Street. wasn't in favor of the working man in Michigan. There's no consensus for why he would bail out Wall Street and not bail out the car companies. And he's a man that you don't know whether he's telling the truth or not, because he's been on every side of every position of every issue. And I don't really understand how they think they're going to beat Obama. I think they're thinking because Obama's been like Jimmy Carter that we're going to win like Jimmy Carter. But they need to look at what Reagan was back in 1980, and it sure wasn't the establishment candidate because they didn't want him.
They have no hope of beating Obama on the Romney side. They really have no hope. I don't know where they think they can, and that's the scary part. And they're not doing anything to enamor any conservatives. They're only after the independents and the rhinos, basically.
The moderates.
Well, hey, you guys do realize I'm going to say something really controversial.
Go ahead.
A moderate Republican is not a conservative.
Well, that's true.
Oh, no, not at all.
The establishment are liberal Republicans, every single one of them.
Yeah. I don't deny that. But look who's becoming one of them. Look at who's been endorsing Mitt Romney. Because they're all establishment to me. Anyone who's endorsed him is part of the establishment.
And
you've got
that?
Marco Rubio, who was, what, a big-time Tea Party
endorsement. Tea Party. And, yes, and also Paul Ryan.
And Paul Ryan, Jeb Bush, all the Bushes, you know, they were labeled conservatives for a long time. They are now moderates in my book. All of them, including the Tea Party candidate, Rubio.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but, you know, you're disenfranchising the people when you say halfway through that, we got to quit now. I mean, this is what's ludicrous about this whole thing. The RNC wanted this. They wanted the excitement that the Democratic Party had going on with Hillary and Obama the last time. So they made it this way. They made it so it would be close and that it would last longer. And now, because they see their candidate is not winning right out, that they want to change the rules in the middle of the game. And this should frighten everybody. This should frighten everybody that the media buys into this and that the establishment is doing this to we, the people, even though we're saying no. Because if you look at the not Romney vote, and I'm not just talking about Santorum. If you combine Santorum and a percentage of Gingrich votes, well, if you combine them all, Romney's lost already big time. But, you know, there's so many people for not Romney that it's ridiculous that they can even think that he'll be a strong candidate in this upcoming
mm-hmm.
election.
This is the thing. I look at, and you know, you might have listened to it on Obamanation several times, but I do what I call the seven deadly sins
mm-hmm.
of politics. And right now what I'm seeing in what you're talking about is the envy of the Republican Party, because they feel like they're losing, quote-unquote, groups of people. They're losing the black vote. They're losing in the women's vote. They're losing the Hispanic vote. They want those groups to come to their side. And instead of trying to unite everyone, which is what they used to do, like what Reagan did,
mm-hmm.
they're just calling for the groups. They're saying, we want to win the Hispanic vote. We want to win the women's vote. We want to win the black vote. And that's not going to work for us. That is not
right.
That's not even going to, you know, even come close to working for the better good or the greater good, as they want to call it. The greater good happens to be going to your base and building upward, not going to the middle and trying to not crumble what you started.
Right, and it's not going to work. You know, you can't run this moderate candidate with no views and expect that to work. You know, it doesn't work. And all they're doing, and because what they tried to do, if you notice, they tried to make the Tea Party irrelevant. Well, I say to you tonight, folks, to anybody who's listening, the Tea Party has made itself irrelevant in this election.
Yeah.
Because they're going with a rhino who will not win instead of sticking
up. Well, no, you know what? The Tea Party isn't focused on the presidents right now. It really isn't. The Tea Party is focused on congressional and Senate seats.
Well,
they are
not
paying as much attention to the president race as we want them to, but they really are paying attention, and they're working hard on those Senate seats and on the congressional races.
Well,
and I give
them
credit for that stuff because their thinking is the same way many conservatives are. Hey, 4 more years of Obama is not as bad as even 1 year of Romney to some extent.
But that's wrong because Obama is not about America. And so they're basically, they are not fighting for America because
realizing that what Obama can do if he does win 4 more years. And did you hear about the new commercial that came out that now has been taken down by that one chick that was on Fresh Prince, Tatiana Ali, I think her name is?
Yeah.
You heard about that?
No,
he came out with the same thing about how saying we need him to win 4 more years because when he gets 4 more years, it's over. It's over. Everything is up for grabs, basically. And the thing that I think of right away is the whole dictatorship thing. If he wants to create a dictatorship, he's going to do it. And people are just going to fall in line and let him. Now, another big thing that is really, really, really important to know is in Germany, at the time of Hitler's rise, there were 80 million people. Guess how many Nazis there were? 8 million. 8 million, 8.2 million, actually, to be exact. But you know what the Nazis did? They lied to people. People did not try fighting against them. Why? Because they believed the lies. They got on the buses, they got on the trains, they went to these, you know, concentration camps with the idea that they were getting a job or getting a checkup or doing things that they were lied to believe was being done for them by the government. Now, there were 72 million people there that could have fought back. There are millions of people here that can fight back against the dictatorship, but they will not because they believe the lies of the left.
Billy?
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah.
Billy.
Go ahead.
There are millions that may not fight back, but one thing you have to remember, there's 10% of the American population that will. Do you know what 10% of the American population is? Let's see. Our population is $360+ million. You take 10% of that. That's 36 million. That's 36 million people who are willing to fight back and see. A lot of times we look at everything that's going on, but we forget to take into account those who are willing. And just that number alone, if it comes to a point where we have to fight, we will overwhelm them. Because let me tell you something. I understand your frustration, but You cannot screw the establishment because they're a bunch of cowards anyway. But don't lose faith in the American.
Oh, I'm not losing faith in God, but you know
no,
what?
No, no.
I have no faith in ma'am.
No, here's what I'm saying. Here's what I'm saying. I'm not talking about having faith in man, but listen to this. If you have faith in God, then you will be able to look beyond the garbage and see see the true strength of the American spirit. Case in point, when I, you know, I put on Facebook, you know, ask for prayers for my heart condition and stuff like that. Do you know how many hundreds of people around this country were praying for me just because the word went out through Facebook?
Hundreds,
probably thousands. But see, here's the thing. That speaks to the true heart of the American spirit.
Right,
and
but the thing is, having the heart to pray for things and having the actual will to get out and fight for the things that we deserve and we should is not the same thing. Because those same people, the same amount of people that I'm talking about, in 2008, 65 million people in this country did not vote. Why didn't they vote? Because guess what? They weren't happy with their choices. They weren't happy with McCain more than anything. And they would vote if they were happy with their choice. However, they have two reasons for not voting. One, they feel insignificant. This person's not out to help me in any way, shape, or form. The other thing is they feel that they have no, it's not going to make a difference either way. They think that if they vote, but they don't see that, guess what? Obama won by less than, 400,000 votes or something. Those 65 million people, if they would have voted, would have made a great difference.
Well, you know what? Here's the thing. Here's the thing. You can be angry and you can be upset, or you could set about to educate, upset about educating the people, and you have to do it in such a way that people can receive it. Because if you do it from a point of anger, that will shut people down. Been there, did
right.
That. So here's the thing. You know, you can be upset or you can say, hey, you know what, I'm going to educate the people. And then once I because the only thing that you and I have to do, we present the information. But once we present the information, whatever the people do, they will be held accountable. You know, I'll share a quick testimony with you guys, and then I'm going to get off the phone because my head is really starting to pound now.
I'm sorry.
No. It's the iodine that's in my system.
I know.
So it's nothing you guys did. It's the iodine.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry that you have to leave us.
Yeah, but I love you guys. So, you know, I'll be back. Anyway, in 2001, actually February of 2001, I was living up in Northeast Kansas at my uncle's house. He's a pastor. And I was going through some really, really horrible times in my life. But I was praying, though, as well. And you know, I was just praying, seeking the Lord and this, that, and the other. And just trying to figure out, why am I dealing with all this stuff that I'm dealing with? Well, in the midst of all that, the Lord in prayer spoke to my heart. And all he said was, America needs to wake up. And that confused me because I'm like, okay, America needs to wake up. And I thought that he was talking about, I thought he meant people who weren't coming to Christ or anything like that. It wasn't until after the 9/11 attack that I realized that God was talking about, he was talking about the church, the body of Christ. And guys, no matter how mad we may get, the reason that the truth of the matter is this country is in the position that it's in because the body of Christ did not take its rightful position in American politics. We allowed ourselves to be sucked into the lie that, oh, if you're a believer, you're not supposed to have any dealings in politics. Okay, if that's the case, then please explain to me then. You're telling me that if I'm who has a desire to live a wholesome life, love people the way God says we're supposed to, I'm supposed to let some immoral individual like Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, Harry Reid, Barack Obama, Charles Wrangel, Barney Frank, Chuck Schumer, Hillary Clinton, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Sheila Jackson Lee, Emmanuel Cleaver, I'm supposed to let immoral individuals like that make laws that's going to affect my life? I don't think so. So in our arrogance, thinking that we was above the fray, we inadvertently allowed evil to get a very powerful stronghold in America. So that's basically what I have to say in a nutshell.
Okay, well, thank you for dropping in and chatting with us tonight. And you take care of yourself and your headache and get better.
Definitely. So. Get some rest.
All right.
Can
well, let
me
give
you no feedback to what I said? No feedback?
Well, I understand what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying to much of the extent. The thing is that with like people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she's Jewish. She is favored by a lot of Jews in her community and in her district. And my husband says it's because of her nose, but I say it's because she's a good liar, like I was saying. She's able to get a response from them by lying to them. She gets a positive feedback response because guess what? People are naive enough to believe the lies. And we have this... And I think of Proverbs when I think of the fool, because so many Proverbs are about the fool. We are becoming fools by these liars out there. They are lying to us, and we're giving them the benefit of the doubt, and people are allowing themselves to fall into the category of the fool, the naive, willing to basically fall in line of fool. And that's what I was talking about with even what happened with the Nazis and the Holocaust and the number of people not voting. The people who are not voting are not the fools. They're the ones, but they're doing a foolish thing by not voting at the same time. They're the ones who see through the lies, and they're saying, we don't want to vote for someone who's lying to us. And both of the possibilities out there are lying to us.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
So they feel
like their choices have been eliminated because both choices are against their belief.
Right. That's a good point. Once again, you make a good point, as you both always do. Love you guys to pieces. God bless you. Ma. And give your families hugs for me.
Oh, definitely. And God bless you. I'll be praying still.
I hope your headache subsides. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye, Thomas. Thank you.
See you later.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
13.2% reporting here, 43.6 for Romney, 38 for Santorum. Still 5%-ish difference, but like I said, there's only 13% reporting.
Yeah, and there's not – it's going to be a long night. Even in Maryland, there's only 18.7% reporting.
It's getting to the checkerboard-looking thing, though. I mean, he's even winning – up by Stevens Point in Wausau area.
And they got this one county over here, Buffalo County, which currently is tied 4.3% reporting with Newt and Rick.
Uh-huh.
And, if these Newt people truly want a conservative, and if Newt truly wants a conservative, he would do the right thing. But I don't foresee that happening. Unfortunately, he had talks with Romney.
Newt's not getting out. He just won't. He wants to go to the convention. He doesn't want Romney to get the 1144, though, and I can understand that. But the thing is, I think the best way to prevent that is to let Rick Santorum have a day. You know, his day.
Especially with states coming up like Texas and California. You know, because what Newt can
Texas,
will do
I'm
there.
Texas, I'm hoping. Gosh, I'm hoping Michael B. can get it.
Well, right
going
now, Texas is
Texas.
Already Texas is already leaning Santorum. So that's, you know, we perceive good things in Texas. Indiana, hopefully with Richard Murdoch on the ballot against Senator Lugar, because that's a big Tea Party thing going on there that will, and right now the only poll they've done in Indiana has showed Rick Santorum winning, and we do have people here in all of our districts for Rick, so hopefully that's going to go for Rick. North Carolina, though, see, that's where Newt's hurting him, is in North Carolina, unless they wake up before the election, because he's tied with Mitt. With Newt in the race, if Newt drops out, he wins by like 13%. So, you know, there's places where Newt certainly has been hurting Rick, and I think Newt's been in North Carolina campaigning. And if you're truly out there trying to help the conservatives win, you wouldn't be doing that, because he's not going to win. But he might give it to Romney, which is just going to give the establishment more fuel for their fire if Romney wins North Carolina. You know, you've got to look at the media hype from this too, and to people who don't follow the elections closely, that's what they're going on, is what the media is selling to them. And so, you know, that you have to take that all into consideration when you're looking at, are you doing any good or are you doing harm? And then we have these new people who are out here slamming Santorum, when, you know, he is so much more conservative than Mitt Romney could ever think about being. It's just a joke. I've been looking at Mitt Romney's record, people, and it's not pretty. I mean, it's not pretty at all. In fact, he actually hurt small businesses in Massachusetts by closing loopholes for them when he went in to try to fix the economy in Massachusetts.
Relate to the middle class, and he definitely doesn't relate to poverty level people out there, because you can't be talking or you know, talking about how you're happy that your father closed the plant in Michigan and moved to Wisconsin just to get a Wisconsin voter to vote for you. But that's what he did.
And nobody published it because, you know, heaven forbid that they publish anything negative on Mitt Romney.
Well, it was on Fox News Live today. They were talking about it, and they're saying those are the gaffes that are going to keep, you know, people away from the voting booths, you know, that they're going to stay home because of it. They're going to stay home in the general, but I think that they're going to definitely go out and vote for Santorum today, mainly because of stuff like that. Those things are not relating to the people. He has no ability to get down to our level because he's never been there. He's been rich his whole life. I don't care what he says. He didn't earn everything he has. He literally had a boost from childhood. He was the son of a governor. He was the son of, you know, Big Otto. But he had that to fall back on, even if he did start at the bottom. So he was never out there. He was never able to really even take a glimpse at what the bottom looks like.
Right.
Because he had that. Now, when you've had, you know, your job, and then all of a sudden your job is gone. We have jobs, not necessarily careers even. As an RN, that is a career field, but it's still, you have a job at a hospital. And if we lose that job, and like the nursing industry is going down, you don't have necessarily something that is going to pick you right back up like he did, is what I'm saying. And he always had that with him. And he didn't invest nobody's money into these businesses when he was a venture capitalist. He had to have money from somewhere to invest into something.
Right.
So you can't say that he did it without having any wealth. So he can't relate to us in that way. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
He's just always going to have money.
Yes. And that, because he's got the fallback. But here's another interesting thing that, you know, if you look at the overall votes, and yes, Mitt Romney has, you know, 4,233,000 in all these primaries, with Rick Santorum at 2,931,000 and Gingrich at 2,230,000. But if you combine the votes of Gingrich, Santorum, and Paul, 6 out of 10 people in the Republican primaries are voting against Mitt Romney. Now, what does that spell for in the general? That just spells for...
It says Obama wins in the general.
A lot of people don't think people are that... I even had one of my bosses tell me this, you know. Well, if you don't vote for Mitt, you're voting for Obama. I said, they know that and they don't care. You know, because
they know that and they want to do that because they don't want Romney. Don't you understand that?
They don't understand.
They don't believe. They see that, you know, like those theories, like I even talk about here where I say we have Obama has the ability to turn us into a dictatorship and lie to each and every one of our faces and get away with it.
Right.
And nobody believes that is possible because of the Constitution, which says he has only 4 years. And if he turns us into a dictatorship, he could have 50 more years for all we know.
Well, yeah, and that's what he's actually working for, if you
that is what he's working for, and we know it. But they don't believe it because guess what? You got to look at what our debt is. Our debt is owned by China. Do you know what that means? That means we are mortgaged to China. China actually owns us. We are renting China's country at the moment. So if we were ever to default, China can claim their take of us. And they will. And right now our deficit is higher than our GDP. So guess what?
Yes.
We're doomed.
Yes,
we are
Obama
a communist country.
Obama just keeps spending it because that's what he wants to do. Because as you and I have talked to before, there are goals that the Communist Party set. And these goals are actually recorded in the Congressional Record back in 1963. No, I'm not a loony from the loony bin. I have read
the
naked
that's
communist.
What I'm saying. The people who say they will not vote for Romney do not see it that Obama can do that, you know, that it's possible. They just literally think that I'm a loony if I say that. Like you said, I'm not a loony, but that's what they think. They think that even the option, the possibility out there is not even fathomable. They don't see the possibility.
And I'm going to read some of these for people listening tonight, because if you read them, you know it's true. Number 3 on the current communist goals, back written, first identified in 58, entered into the Congressional Record in 63. McCarthy was right, folks. Number 3, develop the illusion that total disarmament by the United States would be a demonstration of moral strength. What is Obama doing with our missile defense? What did he say to the Russians? You know?
Don't worry, I'm going to disarm America once I'm reelected. That's what he said.
I'm going to give you our missile defense because we're all friends here. Number 4 was to permit free trade between all nations, regardless of communist affiliation and regardless of whether or not items could be used for war. What have we done? Yeah. Okay. Grant recognition of Red China, admission of Red China to the United Nations. What have we done? It's done. It's been done.
They're challenging our voting laws to China.
Yes, absolutely. Number 9, prolong the conferences to ban atomic tests because the United States has agreed to suspend tests as long as negotiations are in progress. What are they doing with Iran? We're not going to go do anything as long as our negotiations are in process. This is crazy. This stuff is crazy, and it's in the Congressional Record. Go look it up. These were actually men of the time in the 1963 who were concerned enough about this to put it in the Congressional Record. Number 11, promote the UN. Billy, what were you just saying about the UN? The UN is the only hope for mankind. Rewrite the charter. One world government. This is all in here, okay? It's all in here. resist any attempt to outlaw the Communist Party, do away with loyalty oaths, capture, and here's the big one, folks, here is the big one, capture one or both of the political parties in the United States. We, the people, I'm not so sure that there aren't some of these communist invasions of the Republican Party. Why else are they pushing Mitt Romney down our throats? Why else are they trying to go to the progressives, the people who believe in global warming, which, is, if you don't know, is a part that the communists use that the to use to promote the agenda to bring the United States to its knees. That's what they're trying to do. Okay, quickly, in Wisconsin, I got 17% reporting, 43% for Mitt Romney, 38% for Rick Santorum, 10% for Ron, actually 11% for Ron Paul, and 6% for Newt Gingrich. Really makes you wonder about if Newt was out, you know, at this point, 6%. Not all of those would go to Rick Santorum, but how many would, you know, how many of that would go to Santorum? And because we're only looking
more
at
more would go to Santorum,
you know,
and Paul than to Romney, though.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Been polled already.
So it's just interesting to see what would happen, you know, if those people actually decided to get it between the conservative who could win. I don't know. This is another thing that boggles my mind, because these Newt people think that Newt Gingrich is going to win this at the
convention,
and I am just like. People, you know, there is a difference between
it's laughable.
There's a reality out there. You know, Rick Santorum has a good chance to stop Romney from getting all the delegates and of having a significant number of delegates, which if Newt Gingrich can combine those, you know, if his delegates can be swayed to vote for Rick, which a lot of them, you know, may very well be, you know, we have a chance. But Newt Gingrich doesn't have a chance. He can't beat Obama. If you look at the polls, he's never beat Obama. Whereas Rick has beat Obama in the swing states. Mitt Romney doesn't beat Obama in the swing states. And Mitt Romney
even in Wisconsin. Did you hear about that poll? Did you hear about that poll in Wisconsin?
No, I didn't.
Out of Rick Santorum and Romney, they had a poll, and Romney won by like 6%. But when they polled Rick Santorum versus Obama or Mitt Romney versus Obama, Rick Santorum won. Like 45% to 41% or something like that. And Romney had 43% to 47% for Obama.
I know.
And it was like...
I know. And people aren't looking at that. Why are they not looking at that? And it all comes down to money, folks. Money. The money behind the establishment and the government. And I thought we wanted that gone. I thought that was
oh, yeah, you know what?
About.
Another thing I came up with was, you know, if whoever is the Republican nominee,
mm-hmm.
whoever has to debate Barack Obama needs to say, okay, you've got a larger war chest than I do. We need to make it fair now. We need to make it fair, right? So I have the right to ask you to make it fair, right?
Oh,
that'll be
happen.
Fair for us.
Like
you're,
that's ever going to happen.
People who, I know. The people who donated to Obama because they want Obama should have to give up their money and give it to the Republican Party because it has to be fair. That's
right.
The same exact argument against the wealthy having to pay more taxes.
Right. And, Billy, I don't know if you know the answer to this one or if anybody out there listening does. Feel free to call in, folks. Our phone lines are open. We have a caller calling in right now at 502-72, and we'll just see who this is. Hi, who do we have at 502?
Danny Shells.
Oh, hi,
Danny. Hey,
Danny. How are you?
All right, how are y'all doing tonight?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm doing fine. I was a little disappointed they called Wisconsin so quick.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you know, you kind of get sick of that. It's like, who can rush to be the first? It's like, you know, we'd kind of really just rather watch so we can see it come in. But maybe
exactly.
They'll get it wrong. Wouldn't that be awesome if they got it wrong?
Yeah.
I wish, but we'll see. You know, they have before in the past, but yeah. I hate it when they do that. We got 20% reporting here, and it's been called, you know. So we sit here and watch the numbers come in just to see with the counties, because the counties count for delegates. Because obviously Romney's only got 27 delegates in Wisconsin, so the counties are going to count. And Rick's winning quite a few of those counties. So we'll see how this comes out in the end as far as delegates, because there were 40-something delegates at stake in Wisconsin. And the same thing's going to happen in Maryland from the districts. However, in Maryland, looking at the map, right now Rick's ahead in two counties only, so we'll have to kind of see where that plays out as far as delegates. But they haven't given all the delegates to Mitt yet there in Maryland. Washington, D.C., Mitt Romney's got 43%. Gee, they don't have very many people. Why did they even give them? Okay. Anyway, seriously.
Yeah, why do they get so many delegates?
Yeah. Why do they get so many and Louisiana doesn't? What's with that? I don't know.
Well, it has to do with population. Population in Wisconsin is very, 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 it's high.
Yeah. No, I mean, District of Columbia. Well, but that's an urban area, so they may have a higher population.
Yeah.
Because Romney's getting 16 delegates out of there, you know, and there weren't that many delegates. Well, yeah. So it's just interesting to see. This delegate thing has been a real eye-opener for me as far as in the general election.
Oh, yes. That's the craziest thing when you get to checking into it. I'm not even sure anybody knows how it works.
I don't think
we do it here in Iowa. We're still doing it. We're narrowing down our delegates. And it's a process. The thing is, if the convention goes on, we have 28 people from Iowa that will be going to Tampa. And they will then vote for their choice. And who their choice is, all the votes will go in, and then they'll count them, basically. So if, like, all 28 that go from Iowa are for Santorum, Santorum really got 28 votes. However, the fact that, and that has to be what they, that has to be only if they don't win, or if they don't win the 1144 in the primary part of it. So
right.
We have the ability to change our vote if in the fact that, you know, like when I first voted for Rick Santorum here in Iowa, like if I go to the convention down in Tampa, I can change my vote to Romney is what they're saying, which I won't, but we could have it happen that way. Now, here in Iowa, we had a lot of people trying to get in on the Ron Paul bus. However, we also have what we call a platform, and the platform has to be, our delegates have to relate to the platform, and our platform in it directly says that we want America, the United States of America, to monetarily and militarily support Israel. Ron Paul supporters do not agree with that platform. So guess what? Those delegates won't be going to Tampa.
Well, good.
Because they have to promote our platform.
And that's good for you, but, you know, we hear in Missouri where they come into these districts and the Romney and the Paul people ganged up, even though Santorum won Missouri in pretty much a landslide, 53% of the vote. They stole the delegates, you know, and it's almost just crazy the way this is set up. And in each state, and of course it should be this way because, you know, we are a republic and the states have their own rules, but some of these states, the way they set this up is just insane. It's just kind of crazy. To me, it just makes
each
sense.
State has their own way of formatting the delegate race.
Right. And then they don't have officials oversee these delegate. I mean, they're volunteers that run these conventions for the delegates after the election, the caucuses after the election.
Uh-huh.
And they had to shut one down in Missouri because it threatened to get out of hand with the Ron Paul supporters, and so the police said shut it down. And that's just insane. That's just crazy.
It is. It's insane. You're right.
It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It would just make a whole lot of sense to bind them make them all, every state make it proportional, and, you know, award the delegates by vote. And then you get rid of this nonsense that kind of goes on. But like you said, there's even behind the scenes, Texas is meeting tonight, actually,
yeah,
for their first convention, you know, with the delegates. I know Michael B. was going to be there. So, but
we had
mind
one today, earlier.
Yeah.
With our central committee. See, being on the central committee, the central committee and the delegates are two different things. The central committee basically is the overriding body over the delegates. We tell the delegates what to do. Being a delegate and part of the central committee, guess what? I tell myself what to do.
And you do it really well.
Yeah, I do. But at the same time, it just comes down to at our caucus, we had everyone who voted had to write down their idea of what the platform should be here. So mm-hmm. we basically eliminated certain things, like certain goofy things. For instance, one of them had to do with painting something green, or, you know, like highway signs need to, instead of be green, need to be a different color. And so that kind of stuff on the transportation side didn't really go into the platform at all. And that's what the Central Committee did. We had to, you know, tell the delegates what we want them to stand for.
Right. Well, we can only hope that other states do that too. But, you know, some of these states, like in Colorado, they were changing the rules because I saw on Facebook, because, you know, they want to support the rhino establishment and not the people. And so that's pretty frustrating for people out there who are actually trying to work within the process. And then all of a sudden they changed the rules. And they did this also with Florida and what was the other early state that voted too early? So they stripped their delegates.
Arizona,
because it says, the RNC actually said in the paper they sent out that if you had your election early, they would not only strip half of your delegates, but you had any state that actually holds a primary before April 1st?
April 1st, yep.
Has to proportionately award their delegates.
Right.
Yet Arizona and Florida didn't do that.
Right.
So there's still delegates out there that are in Mitt Romney's column that if it goes to convention, that the rich and poor people can fairly argue that, you know what, hey guys, especially in Florida, because you know Florida has some conservative people down there, and he can mm-hmm. say, you know what, technically this is what this says, and so these delegates need to be split up,
and
it's a valid argument.
And what's going to be sad is if they get down to, let's say, he gets 1,100, let's say, not the 1,144, based on the count that he doesn't winner take all those. They
right.
can argue, hey, winner takes all. And they can argue, guess what? No, winner doesn't take all. So it can
yeah.
go both ways.
Yeah, so you know what? I think wasn't in 76, didn't Ronald Reagan have more delegates?
Yeah.
And yet they didn't
Absolutely.
Give him the nomination. So this, if it goes to convention, I mean, this can go any way, folks. This can go any
mm-hmm.
way. And we, as the voting public who have not voted yet, I know, Billy, you voted. Danny, have you voted yet? Where are you at?
No, I'm in Kentucky. We vote
okay.
after Indiana.
Okay, so you haven't voted yet either. So all these people out here who have not voted yet, this thing is not over. Don't listen
right.
to people. We, the people, still can have our say. Because even in these elections they're holding, the voter turnout is not even close to 100%. Just think if you can turn out all the conservatives in your area. Even in the last election, 2008, which was, you know, this historic election. I was sick at the time because I knew what was happening. But, you know, I was versed on Obama's background long before the election took place. So, and on this, the Wall Street, the bailout and who caused that initially.
Right.
I knew who that was. It was Frank and Dodd and the Democrats. But nobody would listen. I was crazy again. I fall into that crazy. But, you know, that's okay. But you guys, we still have a chance to vote. Only 53% of the people turned out. in 2008, 53% of the registered voters, just barely over half, okay? So if in your primary you can turn out a large portion of your conservative voters, you can beat Mitt Romney and you can take the delegates to the convention. Texas has 155 delegates, I believe. California has 172 delegates. It is not winner take all in California. Okay,
it's not in Texas.
Yeah, neither one. Yep. California is actually the winner of the districts.
Texas is winner take all.
No, it's not. They were thinking about doing that and then they didn't.
It's proportional.
And California will be proportional according to how many counties you win. But there's some big, large numbers of delegates out there yet that Rick Santorum could potentially tap into. So this is not over by a long shot. And so I want to encourage each of you to keep fighting in your individual states and, you know, get the word out. Try to get to the conservatives in your state. Like I said before, here in Indiana, we're trying to get rid of Richard Lugar. So there's going to be a large Tea Party turnout. Hopefully those people will also vote for Rick Santorum instead of Romney. I really hope they do, but we'll see how that plays.
Another thing, by Newt staying in and reducing Rick's victories and margins of victories,
right,
then he doesn't look like the front runner that he could be.
He would have won.
And then other people, like in Maryland, they were saying, well, people was just voting for who they thought could beat Romney or Obama, and that was Romney.
Right. Which is crazy, because he's the one who can't. You know, he really can't, because they're already playing the commercials. You need to get. I was watching them today, you know, the mandates. Mitt Romney voted for mandates, and yes, I know it's on a state level, but the general public isn't going to know that, because as you and I and Danny and all the people who listen to these shows, we have chosen to inform ourselves beyond what the normal person, you know, either has time or is even interested in doing. So, but let's give some quick results. We got 27.7 reporting in from Wisconsin, got Romney at 42% and Rick at 38%, Ron Paul at 12%, and Newt Gingrich at 6%. So still within just a 3-4 point percentage range. And Mitt Romney was predicted to win this by 9%. Up in Maryland, we got 50% reporting. We have Mitt Romney at 47.6%. So we'll call that 48. Rick at 30. Newt Gingrich at 11. Ron Paul at 9. Now, here's the thing about Maryland. Maryland was expected to go for Romney. It was expected to go big for Romney. The last polling they did had him up by 25 points, 52 to 27. We're not quite seeing that large percentage. We're seeing about an 8% less than that. So Rick Santorum actually performs better than he polls, even in the Democratic states. What that tells you is that he's turning out voters. Okay, Rick Santorum is turning out voters. Mitt Romney is not. In fact, he turns away voters because of his robocalls. And just wait, Danny, we're going to get them.
and
they're not pretty, so I hear, you know.
And how bad would McCain have lost if it wasn't for Sarah Palin, because she was the one that inspired the voters.
Oh, I know. You know what? I love Sarah Palin. You know, but they reined her in. They should have let her go.
Yeah.
They shouldn't have tried to temper her down. But see, Mitt Romney has said he'll do the same thing, that he won't attack Romney like he does his opponents in the GOP race. What is wrong with that picture?
Well, and then I don't know if you paid any attention to John McCain's Senate race, but he cut loose on the conservatives running against him.
No, of course. It's just crazy. And yet, against this president, McCain called a truce with him, too. Wasn't going to run bad things against him. Yeah, which is crazy. It just doesn't make any sense unless you go to these goals. And we have something going on in our party where it says
get control of one or both parties.
Yes. Number 15 on the list, and it really makes you wonder. You know, it really makes you wonder who's pulling those strings at the top of the parties that's making this happen, because somebody is, and it's somebody with money, and it's the establishment, and it's the people we need to be fighting against. And the only way we can really do that is if we get out and vote. So, but number 16 on this list is also interesting because, you know, we got these Supreme Court things going on, and we have this civil rights thing with Trayvon Martin, which is turning out to be NBC ought to lose their license as a media outlet. But number 16 says, use technical decisions of the courts to weaken basic American institutions by claiming their activities violate civil rights. So they use the courts to weaken American institutions. That would be our schools and our families and
churches.
Yes, churches. And churches, because we violate civil rights. Yep. Yeah, but the Boy Scouts stand strong. They haven't given in to that, but they're one of the few groups that haven't given in. But they have tried, certainly have tried. They've had the lawsuits come against them, but they've been able so far to maintain their independence from that. But that's exactly right. So it's all those things. I'm going to play a little clip here. This is a clip of Red Skelton. Some of you may not know who he was. Some of us are old enough to remember him, a comedian, kind of a stand-up guy. And I'm just going
to
play a little clip.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I went to the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. And I used to, this is true. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. He was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher. Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell is... He says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity. Allegiance, my love and my devotion to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom. Wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United. That means that we have all come together. States. Individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose, and that's love for country. And to the Republic. Republic. A state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people, and it's from the people to the leaders, not from the leaders to the people. For which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance: under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that would be eliminated from schools too?
Powerful, powerful, and very moving. And that was probably done, I don't know if anybody knows when that was done, in the 60s or early 70s, or what's that?
Well, yeah, it was in the 60s, I believe, but okay. When he went to school was in the 50s because we only had 48 states then.
Yeah, but I mean, Red Skelton, when he was doing his shows and stuff, I remember them. When I was a child, that would have been in the 60s. And for those of you when they laughed, if you hadn't seen him, he used to make these, he would pull his hat down and do some funny things with his face and become this person, you know, whatever. So the laughs that he got at that point of silence was one of those. Because he was kind of funny to watch. I actually, you know, enjoyed watching. But that's very powerful, very powerful. You know, and what are they trying to do to us, you know, today? And if we go back and just listen, you know, to him and to people like Paul Harvey and Ronald Reagan, as we played at the beginning of our show, warning us about what could happen to our country. And it's happening today, and people don't realize it. We have the threat of, real threat of the Sharia law and the Muslims who are using our Constitution against us to have their way in our country, and that's not what our forefathers intended. Okay, we got 35% reporting in out of Wisconsin. We got Romney at 42%, Rick at 38%, Ron Paul at 12%, Newt Gingrich at 6%. We have 55% reporting in out of Maryland. We have Mitt Romney at 47, Rick Santorum at 30, Newt Gingrich at 11, and Ron Paul at 9%, and we have other at 2,300. Actually, in Wisconsin, we have others at 6,154. Okay. I guess they're
very convicted. Yeah, and the thing is, about Wisconsin especially, they were saying a big reason there's going to be, I mean, in Wisconsin, there's actually 3 million people. And if they're saying 35% is about 500,000, not even, about 300,000. Then we're looking at hopefully about 1.5 million voting today. Well, no, about 900,000, not even 1 million voting today. So of 3 million people in Wisconsin, that's not exactly good, because in November, if that's the same turnout for Republicans, and, I mean, this is talking about, you know, Democrats can vote in this too.
Right.
So there's probably a lot of Democrats that are really trying to, like, either favor Romney, because that's who I think that the Democrats really want to face. They don't want to face
They're already running ads against him. Yeah. They don't want to face Rick. They can't face Rick because Rick didn't vote for mandates. Never has.
Right.
In 1994,
exactly.
He came out against mandates. You know, that doesn't work against Rick. You know,
they're looking forward to Romney because there's nothing they can really battle against him.
Yeah,
but
well,
this
I have
is a very low turnout for Wisconsin.
Go ahead, Danny.
And if Romney wins, they don't lose.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's a moderate and he won't push for any strict laws, and he may very well hurt us even more because, as I was saying, I was reviewing his record in Massachusetts, and he hurts the small businesses. And And then his tax plan, he wants to tax charitable donations. Okay, folks, charitable donations of the 1%?
Only on the wealthy, though. That's a good
thing. Yeah, but who is that going to hurt? The poor people. And what's
well,
that going to do? It's going to end up needing more government services to take care of them because they're taxing the wealthy 1% on their charitable donations. Okay, that to me is just incomprehensible.
It is. You're right.
That's not what you need to be taxing. Charitable donations need to be able to write
the
those
thing
off.
Is,
that's
government doesn't think that it's coming down to, especially those rules that you were bringing up. Religion, they're not seeing a place for religion in our society as the ones who take care of the poor anymore. They're
right.
seeing that the poor are being taken care of by the government. The
which
government's
is not,
the one to turn to.
Which is guaranteed to take us down the road of Greece and Europe. Only what's going to happen is
I'm
there's
telling
going
you,
to be a massive
we're
war.
To China.
What's going to happen is there's going to be a massive war, and there's nobody going to be able to protect the free world, because we are the last hope of the free world to be protected against those who would harm everybody, including England, including Greece, including, you know, all of these democratic countries. It's the United States that protects them from the communists and from China and from Russia and from all these people. And yet what we're seeing now is going to be the complete destruction of the free world, if not just the end totally. But if we keep going down this path that this president would have us be on, or even somebody like Romney, who's not going to go in there and make major changes. And if Romney doesn't win, guess what? We don't win. We don't win the Senate. You know,
nope.
Come on, people. I'm sorry. If what happens in 2008 happens again in 2012 and we don't win the Senate,
we are screwed.
Who is going to check this president? The Senate tries the president for impeachment or for treason, not the House. The House can bring the charges, but the Senate has to prosecute them. And if we don't win the Senate, that doesn't happen. So as much as people want to concentrate on these Senate races, and I think we need to do that, this presidential race primary is important. We need to get the right candidate to make what happened in 1980 happen again, or we're going to be living in some really scary times. This president's already made it known that he's going to give our secrets to the Russians, okay?
Not our secrets.
So
he's just going
wrong.
To, he's demilitarizing us. He wants to take
right.
us down the road of having no defense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Could you imagine if Reagan would have had a House of Representatives like it was when Gingrich was the Speaker?
He did, part of it.
Well, he never had total control. Never
no,
had.
No, he had.
Gingrich was in the House when Reagan was there.
Yeah, but they didn't
but
have
he
total.
Wasn't Speaker.
Oh, no, I think that was when he was, that was Clinton when he was Speaker, but.
I mean, the Democrats was the majority in the House, and for 2 years, Reagan had 51 Republicans in the Senate.
Yeah.
But you need 60 for total control.
Yeah.
It's almost unprecedented what happened in 2008. And that only happened because there were ignorant people voting who had never voted before and only wanted to see a black president. So they just pulled the Democratic lever.
Yeah, there were too many
history
buffs. There were too many that wanted to be around to see a black president.
Yeah,
that
well,
was their goal.
And
they were saying, we want to be a part of history.
Right. And
our vote is recorded as voting for the first black president, and that's a good thing to them.
And the college kids, too. So go ahead, Danny.
Which wouldn't have been so bad if they wouldn't have had 60 votes in the Senate.
Exactly. But that's what I'm saying. That happened because there were too many people voting that didn't realize how government actually works. Because normally, in our general elections, you don't get 53% of the votes, which is really, really sad. It's much less than that.
Well, he promised
know.
Free health care for all. He gave them promises.
But, I mean, literally, there's a checks and balance system for a reason. And that's
well,
why
yeah.
most
we
voters,
know that.
Voters
they
who
don't.
Vote, yes. And this is why, you know, usually you'll see a president who and the of one party and the House and the Senate of another party. It's because of the checks and balances. And that didn't happen in 2008, and that leaves us where we are today, which is not in a very good place. So, but here on number 40 on the list, and this speaks directly to Rick Santorum, because Rick Santorum has his book out, It Takes a Family, and he's strongly pro-family. Number our list, if you're wondering, is the communist agenda that was entered into the congressional record back in 1963. Says discredit the family as an institution, encourage promiscuity and easy divorce. Number 41 is emphasize the need to raise children away from the negative influence of the parents. Attribute prejudice and mental blocks and retarding of children to suppressive influence of parents. Isn't this interesting? What do they do? What do they try to do to conservatives? Oh, we're actually indoctrinating our children. And oh, look, people who watch...
Well, of course we're indoctrinating our children. We have the right to. They're ours.
Well, and
we're teaching them right from wrong.
They want to persecute people for disciplining their children because they swat them on the backside.
Yeah, I know. Which
I mean,
probably every
of them,
one of us had that threat of whooping when we were little, and I don't think we turned out bad.
Yeah,
and not only that, you know, I'll tell you straight out. I can count on one hand how many spankings I had as a child. But that's because you learn from your mistakes. You learn what you don't want to happen as your consequence. Today's people have no consequences. If there's anything wrong, they go to the government and the government fixes it for them, and they have no consequence for that action. If they, if they don't have health insurance, go to the federal government. You don't have to pay for it. It's just paid for by the taxpayer. It's just, you know,
well, it's
the
not
thing
pretty.
Is like.
The taxpayer
like I say,
is the middle class. That's us. They're taxing the middle class, and they're destroying the middle class, and it's not alleviating poverty. In fact, if you look at the numbers, there's been an increase in poverty because what it's doing is it's turning the middle class into an impoverished class because of the government, you know, all this free stuff from the government isn't free, and we're paying for it. We're paying for it, and that's, you know, that's not helping the general public. You know, it just
and
isn't.
You know, the thing that has been going on again this week with President Obama is about talking about taking subsidies away from oil companies, right?
Oh yeah,
and how
like raise the gas prices even more. Come on,
yeah, exactly. And subsidize, and these subsidies are the same subsidies that all companies get. The subsidy for hiring veterans, the subsidy for hiring women, the subsidy for, you know, all of those subsidies they want to take away. But they want to still let them remain only for those kind of companies that they pick and choose. So they pick their winners and losers. But do you know, of oil companies, they pay not 35%, not 25%, not 15%. They pay over 40% every year in taxes.
Right. Well,
and they're saying we want them to pay 60% because of their 40%, they get about 20% in subsidies. And that to them is a big thing to worry about. And I'm sitting here like, what are you talking about? There's 9 million jobs out there because of oil companies. 9 million.
And guess
in our country alone.
Guess what they'll do if you do that? They'll leave.
Exactly.
then your job is gone. I mean, it's really a simple concept, people. You know, the money is not yours. And these people that have this money aren't going to just give it to you. They're already giving for you, like Billy said. And they'll go overseas. This is what happened. This is where our jobs went. This is why Rick Santorum says to bring manufacturing back, we'll have a 0% manufacturing tax so that they can build here and actually be profitable here in the United States and have jobs for the people here in the United States. You know, these people who want to raise taxes on the businesses drive them out of the country. They drive them overseas, and it leaves us where? With high unemployment numbers that are grossly underestimated by this president just so it can fit his narrative of how he's creating jobs. It's just insanity. And the people that actually believe that this money should be theirs, to me, is kind of, and it goes again to taking them out of the families and teaching them what you want them to believe. And that's a solid state tactics, too. You go down into the inner cities and you get into their churches, and what do we see? You know, we see people thinking we owe them. This is owed me, you know, and
then you got Sharpton and Jackson doing their number.
Oh my goodness! They got a. There's been violence against white people. An elderly man was beat to death with hammer, pulverized with hammers by two colored guys down in Florida. And I'm sure it's related to this case. And I think they ought to charge Al Sharpton for this because of his. Yes, all of them. They ought to bring charges against them. But it will never happen because. The Democrats.
They already settled on the Spike Lee thing. They've already got this. They can't come back after them clause.
Yeah, but it's the hate that they're stirring up, and it's the hate that they indoctrinate these kids with. And yet, the biggest crime is that 90% of the crimes are black on black, and they're killing each other. And does this president care about that? No. Does Al Sharpton care about that? No, because it doesn't fit his narrative that the white people are the bad people, the enemy, the racist. Instead of focusing on the problems to try to fix and help these people, they want to make it about race because that's how they get elected. That's how they maintain their stranglehold on the black vote. That's how they indoctrinate the children. That's how they change this country and make it insolvent. But
I want to know what if. I really do. I want to know what if someone goes out there and literally kills this George Zimmerman guy mm-hmm. and comes back to the Black Panthers and says, I want my bounty money.
Yeah. Isn't that
what
crazy?
Would happen if that happened? You want to know what would happen? I'll tell you. I can actually tell you that nothing would be said on the news. Nothing at all, except maybe Fox News would say something about it. But MSNBC, all those companies would just sit here and say, you know, basically he died. Oh, well. And
yeah.
Guess what? The story's all done. Can't prosecute the guy. He's dead.
Yeah, I'm seeing a little bit of a revolution, and I think it comes from the social media, which is why they're attempting to shut down social media, where NBC is having to answer for, they edited the 911 tape.
Yeah.
They edited it to make it sound like Zimmerman was racist, and, you know, and he reported a suspicious person walking around where they had multiple robberies, identified himself, and the 911 operator asked him to describe, you know, what race the guy was, and so that's when he said black, but see, MSNBC and NBC took out that portion where the 911 operator asked him the race of the individual. So they made it look like he was targeting him because he was black, which was not the instance at all. And
right.
It's really, really sad that, you know, they can call that media and actually propagate it on TV when all it is just hate. Basically. But I actually, in this, you know, they tried the war on women thing. That didn't work. It backfired because too many women are smarter than they give us credit for. They're trying to create a crisis in some sort of way. Obama is setting up this Supreme Court ruling as a crisis by saying what he said. Fortunately, the Fifth Circuit Court is on to it, and they've called him on
right.
it right away. You know, so that's going to backfire on him. The only thing that hasn't backfired yet is this Trayvon Martin, and it's because there's a portion of our population that has been indoctrinated, and Herman Cain would tell you this right out, that they are indoctrinated by the Democratic Party. That, you know, that this country is against them because of their skin color, that the white man is the enemy. And this is the class warfare. This is class warfare. It's typically what they use, the socialists will use, is to use the working man, the unions, to rise up against the man, which is the corporate people who own the money, because that's not fair. They should share their money. And those are the two parties, those are the two things they still got working for them, is the unions and the black community, unfortunately, because we, you know, we have a lot more in common than people would even believe. And yet the rhetoric is, well, we all heard Reverend Wright talking from the pulpit, and that goes on a lot more than what we would like to believe. In
well,
country,
yeah,
so.
We white men are evil, you know, the white man
yeah.
is.
And the Tea Party is particularly awful. I'm not really a Tea Party. I'm a right-wing Republican, but I think we're pretty close in our views, you know, that I could go either way. But I am for some forms of government, because I think you have to, in this kind of world with the kind of technology we do have to have some government control. And our forefathers actually set up, you know, some form of government.
The Tea Party is just for smaller government.
Right. And that's what I'm for. You know, as a Republican on the right wing of the base, you know, I don't want the government dictating to me, you know, on birth control and all this other stuff. I'm a social conservative, and I'm a fiscal conservative, and so that means less government. That means, you know, we don't kill innocent children because we want to play, but we don't want to have to suffer any consequences for, you know, our behavior, because heaven forbid that anybody suffer consequences for their behavior, like a responsible adult, that would be just criminal. But again, that goes back to our list. So go on, Danny.
On Twitter here, Santorum won 3 states, much bigger landslides, Missouri, Minnesota, Colorado. And I don't see all the whole MSM like tonight for Romney, who barely won Wisconsin.
Yeah, right now he's only up by about 3%.
Exactly 3.5%.
Yeah. And we got about 47.5 reporting. So it's a close one. And this is what you get. You got 143,406 going for Rick and 156,665 going for Romney at this point. And Newt Gingrich pulling 22,936 votes. Well, I don't know what to say about that. Ron Paul people most likely are either going to go, who knows where they would go. A lot of them aren't going to go anywhere but to Ron Paul.
Well, see, there's a lot of people in Wisconsin tonight that aren't voting at all, and they're waiting for that recall election, you know, the recall of Scott Walker. And that's, like, taking precedent right now. They don't even care about the presidential race, because once the recall takes place, however, this is a good scope into it. When they look at how many people vote for the Republican, if you are Republican, so that's another thing that's hard to tell about this. If there's Democrats voting, then it's really like throwing off the scope. But the number of Republicans voting tonight will tell how many people might want to keep Scott Walker. And I think the Santorum supporters are the ones that you'd look at more than the Romney supporters for Scott Walker supporters.
Yes. But it's still sad. I mean, and I think people just don't realize the importance of this election. I don't think they realize what's going on. A lot of people don't even know that, you know, the separation of church and state is not in the Constitution. Had that conversation on Twitter just the other day.
I know.
You know, it's like, no, people, it's not there. Sorry. you need to try
this
again.
It's the First Amendment. It's the First Amendment.
No, it's not. Not what it says, not what it means, you know, but that again, you know, is
the
liberal
interpretation.
The fact that
they should not establish a religion does not mean that religion has no place in our country.
Right. But they're not supposed to establish, and they're not supposed to interfere with it, you know, with religion. But
it's,
you know,
basically saying religion has its own entity. Religion is its own government. Government cannot dictate religious values or religious doctrine. And that is noticed on the Supreme Court by all of them, actually, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because when they determined that the government cannot define that a clergy must accept women, like Catholic doctrine has to accept women on their clergy. It was voted 9-0 against that. It was Obama, his own idea to bring that forth in the Supreme Court. And it was shot down 9-0. And that is just something that you got to look at and say, what is this guy thinking?
Right.
All he wants to do is eliminate any type of power that the church has.
Right. Absolutely, because they have to get rid of our churches and our religion. That's on the list, folks. You know, it's there. I'll go read it for you in a minute. I just saw this come up on Twitter. It says, Romney, Maryland chair tells Piers Morgan, the gender gap will disappear when Santorum drops out and the governor's real views come out. All right, that's the second person in his
gas to come out and get shaken up.
Yep, and I wish people would just pay attention to the truth that's out there in front of their faces and they're being smacked with it and not paying any attention. But 51% reporting out of Wisconsin, 42% for Romney, 38% for Rick, 6% for Newt, 12% for Ron Paul. Maryland is at 68% reporting, has 48% for Mitt, 30% for Rick, Newt at 11%, and Ron Paul at 10%. Washington District of Columbia has Mitt Romney, and okay, here's a race where Santorum wasn't in it, and Romney has 70% of the vote to Ron Paul's 12, to Newt Gingrich's 11. Folks, Romney has 2,688 votes to Newt Gingrich's 407. Okay, District of Columbia. That is a 60% difference. Okay.
That's because the Democrats voted.
Well, it doesn't matter who voted. Newt couldn't even
get
up to half. I know. But in Maryland, we see a difference here. You know, Rick's got 53,000 to Mitt's 85,000. Newt Gingrich is taking in almost 20,000 votes. That becomes a much closer race if Newt is out. Rick Santorum would have won Ohio. Ohio's in recount mode. I haven't heard the recount results, and I don't know if anybody even knows that because nobody covers that. You know, they had 1,100,000 people vote, and it was only a 10,000 vote difference. If Newt Gingrich is not in that race, Rick Santorum would have won Ohio, and I maintain the same thing for Michigan. And then we have a whole different ball game. But as it stands, you know, because of Newt Gingrich, the one who supposedly wants to beat Mitt Romney, and he's campaigning against Rick Santorum, putting out negative ads against Rick Santorum. Why do you do that if you're a conservative? You know, I question the motives, and I think everybody.
Well, see, that's exactly it.
Question the motive.
They totally ignore the Reagan, you know, commandments, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
All they do is bash each other, and that gives the whole party a bad name.
Well, and here's the thing. It's not like they're not even telling the truth. Mitt Romney tries to say he's more conservative than Rick Santorum. And that's got to be the biggest lie out there. It's not true, you know. And they use his votes on the debt ceiling. Well, you know, the GDP was, you know, not near what it is today. I mean, very low percentage of our debt.
Like I said, we're mortgaged to China.
Yeah.
We were, or?
Right. Yes, there's many reasons for it, but, you know, Mitt Romney tries to use this to make Rick Santorum out to be big government. Newt Gingrich is guilty of the same thing, and Newt Gingrich knows very well that's not true. You know, he knows very well that's not true. And then they try to bring up – go ahead.
Everyone in Newt's votes was perfect.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. Newt Gingrich has – I'm sorry, but anybody who sat on a couch with Nancy Pelosi and went on an educational tour with Al Sharpton – I'm sorry, I'm just not buying into this theory that he's a conservative and he's changed his ways. You know, I'm sorry, I'm just not buying it. You know, look at
the
people they hang out with. Huh?
He could marry the Pope's sister and I wouldn't believe him.
Yeah, what did you say, Danny?
He wrote that book, Contract with the Earth, that talked about Agenda 21 and global warming.
Absolutely. Yeah. And why are these people ignoring this? What is wrong?
They don't
with
ignore
that?
It. They just think it's not true. They are the fools, I'm telling you. They are the ones that have been lied to, and they believe the lies.
Well, he does talk a good talk, but I think your actions speak louder than your words. And I also think you can tell a person by the people they hang around with. Mitt Romney hangs around with who? Oh, the NASCAR owners. I know somebody who owns a NASCAR, you know.
I'm very good friends with them.
Okay? Look at who he hangs around with. Rick Santorum coached Little League, okay? He hung out with regular folks like you and I on the Little League course where we're out coaching our sons and daughters. That's an everyday American. Newt Gingrich is sitting on a couch with Nancy Pelosi and doing an educational tour with Al Sharpton. Okay. Obama hangs out with Bill Ayers and George Soros and known members of the Communist Party and studies Saul Alinsky. Okay. Okay, not good. Not good. You know, and yet they want us to believe that Rick Santorum is the one that's not conservative and is not for the American people. Yet he doesn't have any big money friends. Well, Foster Fries, I guess, likes him. But, you know, he literally for 3 years he coached Little League for his son. That's something, you know, Danny, I, you know, when I was, my kids were younger, I was taking them to the Little League. I wasn't coaching, but I was helping. And
my son and my husband coached my son's soccer team.
Yeah, exactly. That's what an everyday American person does, you know. They don't strap their car. Who would strap their dog to the top of a car?
I know, and that, you know what, that is funny. I have to admit, the fact that the dog shit down the, I'm sorry, you know, I'm sorry for my language, but I have to laugh at that. He has diarrhea all over the side of the car, and what does he do? He stops, he washes it off, and he leaves the dog up there? You can't be kidding me.
I wouldn't have put my dog up there.
See that as something that, hey, you got to take care of this dog?
We used to have, when we would travel, our dog would travel in the car with us. Of course,
our dogs do too.
There was one funny story when we were little, and my mom's family's from Mishawaka, South Bend area in Indiana. And so we had traveled up there, taken the dog with us. And we're coming home, and we're in the back seat, and we're trying to get Dad to stop. Dad, the dog has to go to the bathroom. He wants out really bad. Oh, you know, Dad's not going to stop. Oh, all of a sudden, he had diarrhea.
Oh no.
My brother.
Oh, no.
And I'm in the middle of the car because I'm the youngest, so I'm in the middle. So they got my sister and brother are hanging their heads out the window, and I'm sitting there gagging in the middle of the car. It's like,
oh, no.
Oh, that made my dad pull over. It was like, okay. But, yes, our
poor
dog
little Brenda.
In the car with us. You know, but, yeah, being the youngest does have its drawbacks sometimes. That was particularly an instant of that. It's like, oh, give me some air. But, yeah, I just don't know why anybody would strap their dog to the roof of a car.
That's sad. It's sad. You take two cars if that's the problem.
Again,
I mean, how many cars do they have? And you put the dog in one.
Well, and how big is the dog? I mean, really. Of course,
exactly.
You know, my first husband and I had a Great Dane before we had our children. So we just took the back seat out of the car, and he rode in the back seat. And then we fed him cheeseburgers from Burger King. So that's what
we have an SUV, so, you know, we've got a middle seat, and the dogs usually stay in the back, and they like that.
Yeah. Well, in ours, when we were driving, you know, the dog would just sit by us or sit on our lap in the car. But our dog was a little rat terrier, so he wasn't really big. But he just rode with us. He sat with us in the back seat. So. Okay, we got 56.5% reporting in from Wisconsin. We have Mitt Romney at 42. We have Rick Santorum at 38. Ron Paul at 12. Newt Gingrich at 6. I tell you what, I just wish Newt would get out because I would like to see what the numbers would be straight up. In Maryland, we have 74.5 reporting. We have Mitt at 48% and Rick at 30%. Now, Mitt Romney was projected to win Maryland by over 25 points. And at this point, it doesn't look like that's going to happen because Rick Santorum is pulling out the votes, obviously. And in that one, Newt Gingrich is at 11%, so it wouldn't have been enough to overcome Romney, although That is a very liberal state. Like I said, has not gone Republican in a presidential
election.
And
it's so close to Massachusetts, too. It's right in his territory.
Well, you know what? Mitt Romney's not going to win any of those in the general election because they're Democratic states. Maryland has not voted for a Republican since 1988. So, you know.
they voted for a Republican the year that, what's his name, took over?
Bush 41.
Clinton.
Yeah.
That's weird. They didn't vote for Clinton.
Well, that was coming off of, you know, Reagan years, and that was some good years, so.
Yeah.
You know, 84 would have been Reagan. So, and Bush being vice president, they probably figured that would be a good bet. But since then, they've changed their mind. So, Wisconsin.
Santorum's leading right now in 4 of 8 congressional districts in Wisconsin, 12 delegates.
12 delegates. Okay. Awesome. That's 12 to Romney. So far, they got Romney at 27. That may go up a little bit. So he's not winning a huge amount of delegates tonight. It's not anywhere near. He's not anywhere near the 1144 needed to win the outright nomination. The only way he wins the nomination outright is Rick Santorum gets out, or they minimize Rick Santorum to a point of trying to push
him. I
think
one thing, though, that was bad was Rick Santorum went to PA so early. He shouldn't have left Wisconsin to go to PA. I mean, they're not even they're 3 weeks away.
Well, he was actually spent a lot of time in Wisconsin. But
I think he should have probably stayed and had any, you know, just stayed through tonight just to make sure.
Here's a big problem, though. Well, he hasn't done that in a lot of his races. Like, he went to Louisiana out of Alabama, I think. And he went from Illinois, he went to... Where did he go?
Wisconsin.
So, you know, that's been his kind of habit since Florida, because he felt like he was wasting a day when he didn't go, you know, when he didn't go to the next state while he's just waiting for results. So that's kind of been his mantra, is he just goes to the next state. But the negativity that comes out of the Romney campaign turns voters off. I was reading on Facebook where this one person got one that said that they were going to vote Democrat. And I actually had a call like that in Illinois, too. He is forcing Republicans to want to vote Democrat. And yet, Rick Santorum, according to Savage, is the one that's being negative. And if you watch the news, they try to say Rick Santorum's the one being negative. And yet Mitt Romney is the one making multiple robocalls into these states that are angering Republicans. They don't have a clue, and they're not telling you people. I got several of those calls. I had one person even tell me she was going to vote Obama because she didn't think the conservative issues would fly, and she thought Obama was doing a good job on the jobs and the foreign policy, and I'm just shaking my head, and Billy's heard this before. You know, I'm just, you know, and you can't argue because you're on a call for the campaign. I was calling out of the campaign office, but, and, you know, several people, you don't quit calling me, I'm going to vote Democrat. And it's not Rick Santorum calling, because we get a list, and I doubt that we get through all the lists. It's Mitt Romney and his robocalls. And yet everybody takes the blame. This would be a vast, vast mistake because he can't run on his record, and he's certainly not going to be able to run on his record against Obama, and he certainly can't take Obama down with negative phone calls because that's not going to work. It's going to turn people off. So I just want to encourage people to tell you this isn't over yet. This is an expected outcome. We got a terror tracker on the line. Do you see that, Billy? I wasn't paying attention. I will bring them on. Let's see who this is. Hi, Terror Tracker. You're on the air.
Hi, Brenda. Hi, Billy. How are y'all doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm good. This is Gary Johnson. I spoke with y'all a little while back about foreign policy.
Yes.
I was just I was just watching TV today, and I was kind of bored with the election results, to be honest. And I was noticing the Obama walk back a little bit of the situation with the Supreme Court.
Really? Oh, he walked it back, huh?
Oh, he walked it back slightly. He, you know, yesterday he came out and was, you know, talking about the fact that never before had this, you know,
yeah,
type of thing happen.
Right.
I mean, the fact is it's his baby, it's his namesake, you know, Obamacare's, all that jazz.
Right.
But he was a little bit upset with the fact that the Supreme Court would have the gall, you know, to try to strike down any part or the whole law. But I was wondering if y'all had been paying attention up at what's been going on in the the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals up there in Ohio, in your neck of the woods, as far as the situation with the AIG case.
No, I have not. Have you, Billy?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
Okay, I don't know how familiar you are with the case. Back in, just for your audience, I'll kind of explain it a little bit. Back in 2008, whenever we had the TARP bailout, one of the main things that was bailed was the insurance giant AIG.
Right.
And pretty soon after that bailout, it ended up being something along the lines of $185 billion that we bailed the insurance giant for. A lawsuit was filed by a gentleman named Yara Shalmi on behalf of a military vet who had fought in Iraq, and that lawsuit was brought against the against Timothy Geithner and everyone involved with the AIG bailout, and they were questioning the ability of the United States government to actually bail out this organization because it dealt with Sharia compliant finance and taxable offering.
Oh, really?
Right. It was a case called Murray versus Geithner et al. I mean, they didn't know exactly who they were trying to go after at first, and the case came out pretty quickly. It was a big deal. The Thomas More Law Center up in your neck of the woods picked it up. And whenever they started backing the process, a guy named Robert Muise, I do believe, M-U-I-S-E, joined David Rashalmi and started the process of building a case against the government.
I do remember that name.
Right. Well, Yerushalmi is the number one, I guess you would call him, expert on Sharia-compliant finance as far as the American legal profession is concerned. You might have heard of the American Laws for American Courts, the situation that was going on where they're trying in about 20 states to pass this legislation to make sure Sharia law does not get involved in United States court actions.
Right, kind of like what they did in Oklahoma.
Right. The person who's in charge, the person who actually wrote the legislation for ALAC was David Yerushalmi. So he's a big player. He's an enemy of the world of Sharia, the liberals who want to advance the notion of Islamophobia, silence anybody who's to stand up against Sharia as activists.
Right.
And in 2008, when they brought this case, it slowly went forward, and they proved beyond the shadow of a doubt that Sharia-compliant finance was being funded, and it was against the Establishment Clause of the United States Constitution, and the U.S. Department of Justice could not produce one argument against it. I mean, it was a cut-dry case. There's no doubt whatsoever that it was impossible for the government to be involved in this without supporting jihad with money. So it was a case that was going forward, and they were advancing, and they were in the final stages of it at the beginning of this year. And then out of nowhere, on January 13th, the court filed a sealed document dismissing the case on behalf of the Department of the U.S. government, saying that because such a small amount of money went to the jihad with money part of the apparatus, that there was a de minimis clause that meant, you know, it's not that big of a deal. You know, only $153 million really went to jihad. You know, it's not that much. It's not that big of a deal.
Okay.
So they kind of threw it out. And then the next day, the law clerks of, I guess, Muis and Yerushalmi filed a motion that was 63 pages long. And they forced the judge to allow open discussion of the event. And I just wanted to let you know that that was going to happen on the 20th of April in Ohio,
okay,
in Cincinnati. And for those who are trying to make sense of what's going on with the Sharia-compliant finance world and everything that's going on with David Yerushalmi and his group, he has actually started a new group called the AFLC, I do believe, with Muis. And they're actually starting the process of trying to gain funding for this, because it looks to me like the government is just going to every now and again, you know, they're just going to pretend that it's not a big deal. And then they're
right.
going to somehow work with a judge or work with the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. And it looks like it's going to end up going to the Supreme Court in all probability.
I hope it does. I do.
So whenever we're talking about judicial activism, I just wanted to let you know that in all probability, the Obama administration has been angling on this for a long time to change the United States response and reaction to the Muslim world. And one of the things they've done is inside the Treasury Department, they've actually hired a Sharia advisor. They've actually changed the stance of the Treasury Department. Instead of trying to stop jihad with money, they're actually supporting the harmonization and advancement of Sharia-compliant finance.
Yeah, I know. I heard something about that before.
Right. And they're also doing it in USAID and a number of different other organizations. So they're actually actively under Obama advancing a number of Sharia-compliant finance initiatives. And they're doing it
well,
through
public... Well, look what they did with Egypt. They just
exactly.
now... what they do? They, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood has taken over in Egypt, and all of a sudden, you know, we've got Hillary Clinton basically demanding that we continue aiding them. And they have just vowed to, you know, take out Israel. And I don't know, it just really bothers me that we have so little respect for our own constitution that we're trying to adapt these kind of laws.
Well, if you look at what the Obama administration is doing, it's been a slow process of what is called legitimization. They have, whenever they sent Mitchell over to the Jerusalem-Palestine area, what they did was they started the process of negotiating with the political wings of Hamas, Hezbollah, the Taliban, IRGC, and a number of other organizations. And they started looking at the Muslim Brotherhood. I'm sorry, I'm hearing typing. They started looking at the Muslim Brotherhood as, you know, just another organization, another political group that had nothing to do with their militant wing. They figured if they could do business with the political wing, then they could eventually convince them to rein in the militant wing.
Right.
Forget the fact that the militant
wing. They consider them rational. That's what I don't get.
Right. Right. So that's the process of legitimization, and it's happened with Hamas. It's happened with the Taliban. That's why we're negotiating with certain wings of them. It's happened with Hezbollah, and now it's happening at the Sharia-compliant finance level in the economic matrix of the United States government. So the legitimization of Sharia is all but complete, and that's what is being fought over on April 20th. So
oh,
I just
gosh.
Thought your listeners might want to tune in to see what happens, because I think Yerushalmi is going to have a few things to go after that he's going to have to prove that the government isn't willing to listen to.
Yeah.
The hardest thing to prove is that Sharia compliant finance funds jihad. But the fact is, whenever Sharia compliant finance is practiced, 5% of the bank, or 2.5%, sometimes multiplied twice, automatically goes to charitable institutions in
right.
Islam. And of
wow.
that, 1/8 automatically, of that money, 1/8 automatically goes to the fighters of jihad and the struggle.
Right.
Okay.
And that's so the part I don't get is I was watching a special recently about jihad in particular, and they were talking about their tithings, you know, how they tithe for Sharia law and how it comes down to, I think it's 10% or not, 10% of their tithings has to go to fund jihad. And I can't remember who was the moderator or the questioner of this, but they're saying, well, it's not that kind of jihad. It's not, you know, what right. jihad really means is the fight for Islam, the fight to advance Islam. And I myself have, you know, I've talked to people who sit here and say, President Obama is a Muslim. President Obama, he's not a Christian, you know, all this kind of stuff. And the fact is, you know, when you look at their rules about funding jihad and their rules about advancing Islam, Islam in and of itself is a religion that, you know, it's like a different story than Christianity. That's all it is. And it comes down to me, personally, one's good, one's evil. One comes from the whole aspect of you have to kill to either submit or kill your enemy. You know, the enemy has to either submit to Islam or they have to be killed. That's how they basically advance Islam.
There is one other option, and that is to pay the jizya and be utterly subdued. And the jizya tax is just like a head tax, and what they do is they create an they create a second class society called the dhimmis, and that's where they create dhimmitude, or the concept of dhimmitude as an institution. If you hear about the yellow star of David that the Jews were forced to wear in the concentration camps, that was actually started by the Muslims back in the, you know, 7th century, you know, and they actually made the Jews segregate themselves, and the ones who were willing to pay the jizya tax or the head tax and be utterly subdued, at that point they treated them as second-class citizens. And
right.
then that process of dhimmitude has advanced through the ages in a number of ways. But as far as tithing goes in the Islamic faith, it's the zakat, and the zakat is 1/40th. It's 1/40th of your profit income of the year, and it ends up being 2.5% of your yearly intake, and that has to go towards zakat. And the people who are in charge of zakat are the ones who then determine where it goes. The people who are in charge of zakat are generally the muftis and the mullahs, and the people who are in charge of the ummah in different ways. And what they do is they practice what's called dawah, and that's the advancement of the faith through charitable giving and other different organizations. The best way to read about dawah is a book by a guy named Matthew Levitt called Hamas. And it actually, the whole book is about dawah, but he explains how Hamas utilized it to advance over about 200 pages, and it's definitely worth a read. I think it came out in about 2006 or 7.
Cool.
But anyway, I just wanted to call to let you know that on April 20th, there's going to be a dogfight in Cincinnati, and I might be able to make it up there. I'm from Georgia, so I'm going to try to get up there. If not, then I'll probably go to Arizona. I'm actually working on a book about Sharia-compliant finance, so it's probably going to
really?
Be worth
That's
my time
cool.
to go head on it. The AIG case is an important one. The problem that they're facing is that they cannot prove, they're having trouble proving to the judges that this money that is being used by AIG that is going to Sharia-compliant zakat charities actually funds jihad, and how it's a bad thing. Even though all they're trying to prove is that there's an establishment clause breach, and they've already proved that. But there's a lady that was actually brought into the Obama administration early on. You might want to check her out. She's a lady named Samir Ali. And I don't know if you pay attention, but like the cabinet activities and stuff, but every year the administration brings on about 10 or 15 different scholars from around the United States so that they can go back to their home state and teach the people what they've learned. And in 2009, they brought Samir Ali on as their number one pick, like their number one draft pick. And she was a Sharia compliant finance expert who actually, I believe, they're priming to be the first Muslim lady to be on the bench at the Supreme Court in 15 to 20 years. That's what they're. That's where this lady's heading. She's got all the pedigrees that you would need to. The reason I would say it's important to pay attention to what she's doing, she actually was involved with the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, and they brought her on as a specialist for SCF right as this case was getting started. So the Obama administration wanted an insider, somebody who they could actually bring on like a heavy hitter. And somebody who they could use to sway these justices on the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. And that's what looks like happened on January. It's going to be hard to prove, but I think I can do it. You know, it's kind of funny, this lady, Samir Ali, she actually is from a little place called Waverly, Tennessee. And nobody knows where she came from. You know, she went to the University of Tennessee, and she went to Vanderbilt. And her parents actually had a trust, and they're both doctors in Waverly, and that trust had billions of dollars in it, millions and millions of dollars. And her father is actually a major player in some anti-Israeli activity over in the Jerusalem area. And at the same time, even though he's an active anti-Israeli, anti-American activist, he's actually in charge of the Tennessee, the entire medical profession's pension fund.
Really?
So Sharia-compliant finance might have actually taken over the entire medical profession of Tennessee's pension funds already. Just to let you know. So there's a number of things that I'm uncovering, and I just kind of wanted to bring those things to your attention because they're interesting little tidbits that most people don't follow.
Yeah, and
well,
they're interesting.
And it's interesting. It sheds light also on, you know, when Hillary Clinton says things to the Taliban, well, don't listen to the GOP candidates. They're just saying
that. Oh,
well,
not only that, do you remember when she said Al Jazeera was the very best news organization out there?
Yeah, it's like they're
she
pandering.
She said that in front of Congress.
Yeah, and it's pretty scary.
The U.S. Muslim engagement has failed at the political geopolitical level as far as the United States standing in the region is concerned. However, as far as what they were trying to accomplish, whenever they were actively moving into the administration, they were trying to accomplish the legitimization of the political actors and the economic factors, and that's what they've accomplished. And they feel very good about what they've done for the Muslim community. And they're actually right now, it looks to me like they're going overseas to talk to the Russians and talk to the Muslims. And it looks like they're actually trying to get campaign financing.
And you know what's really kind of weird to me? I know, and that's just that that's actually against the law, isn't it? You can't get campaign financing from across overseas.
It depends. I mean, think about it. All they have to do is have somebody in Iran give the money to somebody in the United States as an American citizen, put it in their account, and then they can turn around and second it. So it doesn't really take much. You know, somebody with dual citizenship could easily be a bridge.
Yeah, I guess. But at the same time, what I was going to ask is, you know, this is something I'm noticing too, is, and this is really weird because I've noticed here in Sioux City we have a plant called BPI, called Beef Products Incorporated, I think, is what BPI stands for. And all of a sudden they came out a few weeks ago with this pink slime, they called it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually really, it's just ground beef that's been ground and ground and ground, and there's like a preservative in it that kind of gives it a gel-like texture. But
right.
it's, now they've closed down four plants. And my husband, he works with a guy who used to work at our plant, because actually they've now gone down to only two shifts because now there's like a big outcry. This pink slime supposedly has got national attention. And this is the weird part about it, now that you bring up this Sharia law stuff, because they have said, this guy told my husband about how this guy has to pay the company to keep his job.
Which guy?
And this guy that my husband knows from work.
Okay.
He now has just got, he quit his job. They eliminated his shift. And they told him if he wanted to stay working there, he would have to pay them like $500 to keep his job. And that made no sense to me. And I'm trying to figure it out. Because he's a Muslim. And he said that his boss, who came to him, is another Muslim. And I just said, well, what is that all about? Does that have something to do with Sharia law? Or, I mean, BPI has been here for centuries, or not centuries, but decades. And they've always, you know, been doing this. But all of a sudden, now there's, like, this rule to pay for your job. I never heard that before. And I thought maybe if you knew something about
I couldn't tell you. It sounds to me like you just got I hate to say it, but a slimy leader there. It's one of those things. I mean, the guy could be a felon. He could be all sorts of stuff. I mean, it sounds to me like there might be an administrative short. You know, somebody might not have enough secretarial activity and to get somebody to do the paperwork necessary to get this guy back on. They might have to file paperwork with the government if there's a certain amount of visa paperwork that needs to be done for him to keep his green card or whatever. I couldn't tell you. There's so many
different
ways.
I thought it had something to do with Sharia law that you brought up, you know, this stuff about.
No,
Sharia
law.
I never thought about. Huh?
I mean, when you look at Sharia law, the main thing it does is it tries to it doesn't allow people to utilize interest-bearing loans, and it doesn't allow people to invest in things like pork, pornography, and supposedly weapons manufacturer. But they get around that and can invest in businesses. I mean, if you look at it, there's actually a Muslim index on the stock exchanges around the world, including our U.S. stock exchange. You know, the government of Qatar and a number of other governments actually own most of the NASDAQ. So if you look at what's going on, what they're trying to do is, through Sharia compliant finance, change the nature of the game and what can be invested in and what can't be. But to get around it, the reason they have to pay the 2.5% in Sharia compliant finance businesses is actually to purify the funds, because they've been tainted. You know, and if they're really tainted, if the some of the funds that are made are because of, you know, pornography or because of a pork industry or something that is haram and forbidden in Islam, then they have to double up, and it ends up being 2.5% times two. So they can really purify it, because they got to pray for the people who made the money. You know? So that's what the fund is for. It's actually a purification method, and it's to make sure usury. They actually make sure that usury is not practiced. And it's kind of funny, you know, that the Muslims and the Israelis are at each other's throats, because when it comes down to it, at the level of the Supreme Court and the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals and all the different things that are going on with these cases that I'm looking into, the primary people who are going against Yerushalmi are actually Jews. And they are upset because it affects the Establishment Clause as far as their religion is concerned when it comes to their laws about kosher the concept of kosher and the concept of halal, you know, are pretty close. And when it comes to it, the people of I don't know how if you've heard of J Street before, but
I've heard
the people
of J Street.
Okay, J Street is like the liberal branch of the American Jews, who are progressives and anti-Zionist. And then you've got AIPAC, who is the main Israeli lobby, and they're pro-Zion, you know, anti-Islamic supremacy. And so these two groups, J Street is actually now has George Soros on its, you know, on its board of advisors, and it's now one of the biggest suppliers in the progressive mainstream. So if you look at a number of, like, you can go to pretty much any progressive candidate around the country who's running for the U.S. Senate and see who their funders are, and you'll see J Street as one of the top 10. And the reason for that is because they're trying to compete with AIPAC, and they're trying to show that the Jewish voices are actually not for Israel's, you know, defense. They're actually for Israel stopping the settlements and everything that Obama is preaching. So at that level, I think we're in for a dogfight when it comes to the Jews fighting each other on this issue.
Yeah.
But I don't think the American people are really aware of the difference between J Street and AIPAC. I don't think they understand. All they see is, oh, this is a Jewish lobby group, and this is a Jewish lobby group. One is for Obama, one's against Obama. That's all they see.
Yeah.
So that.
Wow.
Anyway,
so
I know y'all have other stuff to talk about. I just kind of wanted to bring up that and kind of get your eye on it, because you got about 2 weeks to look at it before it actually goes down.
Well, hey, what are you going to name your book?
That's interesting.
Well, I've got a number of different topics.
Have
I was
you?
Thinking about. I'm trying to boil it down, and what I'm thinking about doing is calling it Mapping Sharia Compliant Finance, or Mapping SCF. Because I think while Yerushalmi is the number one guy on the topic, you know, I've been studying it for about 3 to 5 years, and I think my research capacity is far beyond what other people have accomplished. In fact, the information that I was bringing out about the fact that the American Bar Association has a Sharia compliant finance branch and stuff like that, I was bringing out June, have just been picked up in February by, you know, leaders of the pack like Pamela Geller and Brigitte Gabriel. So I would say I'm about 6 to 8 months ahead.
Oh, I love Pamela Geller.
Yeah, I'm about 6 to 8 months ahead in my studies. They don't like to admit that what I'm doing is kind of guiding their research, but it's kind of funny to watch how the information comes out from them and their research panel after I've come out with it 6 or 8 months before.
You think you're following their blog, but they're really following yours.
I don't know. I don't like to make it an issue of ego. I think we're all on the same team. It's just I think they're kind
right.
of they don't know where I'm coming from, and they don't understand how I'm getting the information. You know,
yeah,
and they have to vet it themselves, and I try not to judge.
Yeah, good points, all.
But anyway,
I think
it's going to probably be Mapping Sharia Compliant Finance. I think I'm the only one in the country who can actually sit down and discuss it in terms of a historical reality, starting with the Demitude process and the concept of the institution of the Hizbah that was instituted by a guy named Ibn Tamiyah way back when, and all the way through the piracy of the Barbary pirates to today's Hawala mercantile warfare that's going on in Afghanistan and kind of.
Are you
going to
have a chapter on Louis Farrakhan?
Now, Louis Farrakhan's a bastard unto himself, and I think people who look at Louis Farrakhan and actually idolize him or consider him a reverend or anything of value are just deluded fools, and it just shows you how worthless our educational system is at the public level.
You know, something I was going to ask you when you started talking about this, I just thought of again. Does, like, the mosque in New York does that have anything to do with, like, a lot of this stuff?
Well, the thing about the mosque is, you know, it's just an affront. they were seeing how the
what the Muslims tend to do is they see how far they can push an envelope. And once they find out how far the envelope can be pushed, then they kind of pull back a little bit. And then they, you know, work a political angle and then see how much money they have to throw at it before they can break down a wall.
Yeah,
so
they, like, regroup and they'll come back to it eventually.
Yeah, and, I mean, if you look at it, the reason the Saudis were against the Al-Qaeda group's activities as far as 9/11 was concerned was because they broke ranks and went a little bit early against the great Satan, you know. It's like, hey, we're supposed to do it a certain way. We're trying to be political about it. Y'all are being all militant. Calm down, guys. We're going to get it.
Yeah.
We're going to put our mosque there, you know. But what I would say is important about understanding as far as mosque go, wherever a Muslim puts a mosque, they actually consider it Islamic holy ground, and they actually considered it conquered territory. It never will be removed from their heart as far as they own it. So whenever you have a Muslim mosque go up in your neighborhood, realize that it's no longer U.S. sovereign territory as far as a Muslim is concerned. It's conquered territory of Islam.
Right.
And that's
part of what really scares me about this nation, about what's going on with, you know, like accepting Sharia law in some aspect. And, you know, it's just become... You know,
our
sovereignty is always in question.
Well, there was actually a group, the Center for – I was talking to you last time about a number of NGOs and think tanks and stuff that were a part of the think tank war at the beginning of Obama's administration. And one of the biggest ones that I failed to mention was a Center for American Progress, which is Hillary Clinton's think tank. And Center for American Progress was actually the home office of – Holbrooke, who went to the AFPAC and became their embassy leader. But what they did in late last year was an amazing thing. They actually produced an article called Fear Inc. And talked about Islamophobia. And they've actually united with CARE and a number of other Islamic groups who are all under indictment. And waiting to go to jail as far as the Islamic Circle of North America and things of that nature. And that document, Fear Inc., was actually one of the most powerful salvos ever produced as far as public opinion is concerned. Not because it was right, but because of the timing of it. If you look back as far as David Yerushalmi, in March of 2011, in Canada, Mother Jones produced an article calling David Yerushalmi a racist and a radical and a bigot and all of these things. And,
oh, really?
And then after that, a number of other organizations started to do so. And the Anti-Defamation League, which was normally pro-AIPAC, shifted gears and called David Yerushalmi a fascist. And then you can actually see how the fingers and funding of George Soros worked its way into the Anti-Defamation League and how CARE started working on it. And it's just an amazing thing to watch an organization shift gears. In 2008 and 2009 and 10, this organization was anti-Sharia compliant finance, anti-Sharia. And then all of a sudden there was a radical mark shift. And To watch that happen just because of Soros funding and a number of other things was an amazing shift. But then
that's the
by
thing,
July,
you know, Soros. I'm glad you bring up Soros, and I hope. I'm sorry. I'm going to be reading your book. I can tell you that much. But Soros himself has played so many parts in this whole administration. I mean, I'll tell you, I didn't even know his name until the Obama campaign began. And now I know so much, I've read so much about him. I shouldn't say I know so much about him, but I've read so much about him that really has me scared about his intentions for our country. And he himself can make those intentions turn into a serious reality.
Well, he's a billionaire, and he supports a number of left-wing radical causes. You know,
the ACLU, pretty much every organization that's progressive has his tentacles in it somewhere as far as financing are concerned. So,
well, even knowing that he used to be, he was a Jew who helped kill,
fellow
you know,
Jews.
Other Jews. Yeah. And, you know, I've heard him literally talking about how, I've watched many YouTube videos with him in them, and where he's talking about how easy it would be to take down the American currency.
Well, he's already taken down the British currency. He's taken down the Russian ruble. He's taken down a number of different
wasn't Yugoslavia
currency.
Or something too?
Yeah, I think he's done a couple in the Czech area.
Yeah.
But you have a guy with George Soros who is practicing a philosophy that he considers a religion. And that's the philosophy of Popper. And if you actually look into Karl Popper and what he's talking about in the open society and things of that nature, if you can take the time and read, you know, voluminous works of this guy, he's actually a dangerous thinker. And he has a mentality that totally denies individual rights as the source of freedom.
Right.
You know, and,
right.
and he looks at law in a completely different way. And I would say you have right now, as far as the philosophies of the United States are concerned, you have Ayn Rand fighting tooth and nail with Karl Popper right now. And Ayn Rand's getting her ass kicked. I mean, it's that simple. And I've always been a Randian philosopher, and since I was 15, 16 years old, and that's never probably going to leave me. But because of that, and because of reading thinkers like Camus and all, you know, Thomas Paine, and trying to go into the philosophical realm, you know, I was a couple classes away from becoming a philosophy major at Presbyterian College where I went. But looking at the philosophy that George Soros follows, you have a dangerous entity with the open society concept.
Right, and I see a lot of psychology in our country that's taking hold of our legal systems. You know, even, and I don't know how you feel about, like, gay marriage and stuff like that, but as far as, like, abortion goes and gay marriage and stuff like that, I remember back to when my sister tells me about this one. She had a skier friend. He was a skier, and he was a professional skier, and he made a lot of money at it, but he wanted to quit, and he wanted not to do anything else. So he went to various mental health doctors and wanted them to diagnose him with something wrong. And
right.
Finally, he went to the seventh one, and the seventh one says, oh, we'll call it fatigue syndrome, so he can get SSI.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. And that's where I come up with, you know, these ideas of, you know, when they come out and one psychologist comes out and says, okay, well, we're going to say being homosexual now is no longer a mental disorder. We're going to say it's something you're born with. They
right.
come out and it becomes a snowball effect. And I see that's what's happening with many of these things that are taking place in our country. And I'm using gay marriage as one of the examples, but there's a lot of things.
You know, to be honest, you know, abortion and gay marriage are so far down on my list of things to worry about that they don't even have a number. But,
right.
I mean, when it comes down to what I see is happening philosophically and psychologically with our country, it all boils down to the law of Bastiat. And what Bastiat said, you know, back in the 18th century, 19th century, was that whenever people who are oppressed get the vote, they then have to punish the people that were oppressing them. And what we've seen over the course of the progressive 20th century was, you know, women get the vote, black people get the vote, and then the ACLU and all of the mutations that happened because of it over the course of about a 20-year period. And now you have the offspring and the birth of mutations in the new generation that's out there now. And
right.
Then you have the Occupy movement, which is the final, you know, afterbirth of it. And that is just pure punishment. You know, all they want to do is punish. And the reason they want to punish, they really can't define it. But what I would say is that the Tea Party movement came about to restore liberty, and the Occupy movement came about because they wanted to install equality. And it's like the difference between an American Revolution and a French Revolution. You know, in the French Revolution, they punished the royals and took their heads off. And in this situation today, instead of it being where we're trying to create new free countries, we already have our free country, and we're looking at this, we're looking at freedom from two different angles. And one of the groups defines it from the angle of equality, and one of them defines it from the angle of liberty. And we both come to our definitions of freedom from that starting point and the source of our understanding of things. But when it all boils down to the source of authority itself and the law itself, it's the Constitution, and that's where the Occupy movement and the progressives fail, and they know it. And the reason they fail is because what Obama said himself: the Constitution is filled with negative laws, what the government can't do to an individual, and that's its weakness.
And
Obama's opinion, and that's the entire opinion of the Occupy movement and
right.
the elite.
And see,
guys, we're going to run
Obama.
Out of time real quick, so let me just jump in here real quick.
I just want to say that Obama, as a scholar of the Constitution, makes no sense to me.
He just doesn't want to follow it. So, but we got about 3 minutes left, so let me quickly give an update. Gary, thanks for calling in and giving this information. It's wonderful to get this knowledge and be able to act on that. So, but real quickly, running down District of Columbia, 100% reporting, 70% for Romney, 12% for Ron Paul, Newt Gingrich, 11%. He can't even beat Ron Paul in the District of Columbia. 5,000 votes, 16 delegates, really sad. 92% reporting out of Maryland. We've got 49% for Mitt Romney, 29% for Rick Santorum, 11% for Gingrich, 9.6% for Paul. Wisconsin, we still have 79.9% reporting. We have 42% for Romney, 38% for Rick Santorum, 12% for Ron Paul, 6% for Newt Gingrich. I would point out that if Newt Gingrich is not in this race, it's either much closer or a Rick Santorum win in Wisconsin. I want to thank everybody for tuning in here. Billy, you got about 2 minutes. Have your say.
Well, I just want to thank Gary again for calling in as well, and feel free to call in at any time. And I'd also like him to go ahead and plug his own website where he can be contacted or
I'd mainly like to have people type in my name, Gary H. Johnson Jr., and put it in quotation marks and look it up on Google and just kind of follow my works. I've been writing online since 2008. And I think I'm getting better and better, and I've been doing a number of different things, from Blog Talk Radio to the Tea Party Tribune, teapartytribune.com. I think right now I'm probably for the next 4 months going to just go dark, and every now and again I'll pop up and talk to random people on the Blog Talk Radio, like y'all ladies, and it's just fun talking to you.
It's fun listening.
Y'all are open-minded, and at the same time, y'all are keeping your ear to what's going on. So I just figured out every now and again I'll wake you up with a new fact.
Well, thank you.
Well,
thanks
you
again.
Know, it just comes down to, like I was bringing up earlier, the fools of society in my book is how I see it. And I talked to enough very conservative people to try feeling, and I feel somewhat like a fool because I say, well, I'm going to vote anybody but Obama. And they say, well, you know, we're not going to vote if it's Romney. And I'm like, well, you know, that's like wasting your vote. You have a voice. But the thing is, they're the ones who, I go through the Bible and I look at Proverbs all over again. And it basically says, you know what, don't vote for someone who isn't, you know, going to honor you. in any way, shape, or form. So that's how these people view it. They see themselves as, you know, voting for the person like Romney as being a fool. And it comes down to fundamentally looking at things completely differently now. And I don't know how you see it, but that's just something that really kind of bothers me. And, you know, it's something that I'm hoping people will, you know, view for themselves, see for themselves, and really challenge themselves about, because I'm challenging myself all about it. You know, right now I'm saying I don't know if I'm anybody but Obama, because I'm certainly anybody but Romney at the moment.
Well, you'll make the right decision when time comes. You will not. You will vote. We will vote against Obama, however we do it.
Exactly.
So. Absolutely. All right,
y'all
guys.
Have a great night.
Thanks.
You too. Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay, we're off air, Billy, so
okay.
Have a good one.
You too. Enjoy. Talk to you later.
And I'll talk to you later. Yep.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.